Welcome to the RR Podcast. We bring you the latest in Toku news, in-depth discussions, and everything else that you could ask for, all with a healthy dose of insanity. So here are your hosts, Shugun Shinobi, Dawson Rider, Jedimon, and Aerosol. Riders, Rangers, and Rambles, Season 5. Ready? Go!
Hello, welcome to our Season 5, Episode 8.
Helheim's Kitchen! Yes! I actually wrote that title down a long time ago, and I could not find a use for it, and I'm okay. Like, well, they gotta go back to Helheim for the episode, and this week it invaded, so I'm like, close enough, because I don't think they're gonna do any cooking. So, like, I don't expect the guy from Kabuto to come in and just challenge
well,
somebody
to cook. We can discuss the Hyper Battle video in this episode, and that involved cooking.
You know what?
Sure.
I love Gordon Ramsay shows so much, I'll give it to you.
Finally! Finally, a title that doesn't make Aerosol want to stab me in the throat. No wonder now yeah, I know why it. everyone hated put the guy in the coconut so much. I just realized like why.
Yeah, because it was basically put the guy in the Hitler, and that just no, it doesn't go together. I'm sorry. Maybe some people view Gaim as the Hitler of Kamen Rider series, but I don't.
I view it as the Jesus of Kamen Rider. I don't even know what's happening. We're referencing a joke that people won't get until the end of the show when I put it in the bloopers. It's crazy.
Oh, it made it! Finally! The world gets to hear about the similarities and differences between coconuts and Hitler. This is what RR is about.
It's a treat for you at the end of the episode, guys.
Stay tuned.
Okay.
But first, sports. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, no, speaking of...
Why are you doing the previously on Coral? The fire ferrets did something. I can't even do it.
Speaking of sports, actually, I went to a Tigers game on Monday, and that was really boring.
Sounds thrilling.
No, it was like a super boring game until like the eighth inning, and then we were losing, and then everyone started getting up and leaving, and they're like, "Oh, there goes this ball game," and they're like, rrr, 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 and they get all, got up and left. That like that was legit sounds too. And so we just stayed because we paid for it. We're fucking staying. And
I paid for every last inning.
Every last minute of this. So at the end of the ninth inning, we ended up hitting a walk-off grand slam and winning the fucking game. And so we're sitting here. And I mean, that doesn't happen all too often. And so we're just making fun of all these people that got up and left right before this. Like this
it's
only like happens
getting
like,
up before the end of a Marvel movie.
Basically, because, I mean, something like this only happens maybe, like, I think they said, like, 27 times in, like, the history of the team. And so it doesn't happen all that often, and to miss something like that because, like, you just gave up and left, I found hilarious. I don't feel bad for those people at all, but it ended up being really awesome for that. It was boring throughout, but... it was worth that at the end, at least. But no, outside of that, like, I haven't really got anything or really bought anything. I'm waiting. Oki shipped my box out today, so I won't get it till I get back from Nationals this weekend.
He's going to make it to Regionals, guys. We can do it. He's this close.
If I really try. No, that's... I started reading More Than Meets the Eye.
I heard reading, so I got disgusted.
It's comics, so there's pictures.
Okay, that's better.
But no, if you're a Transformers fan and not reading that yet, probably one of the most entertaining Transformers fictions there has been in quite a while.
It's more than meets the eye.
It is. I purchased Robots in the Skies too, but I haven't got around to reading that yet. They eventually Converge? Yeah, Converge. That's the right word. Skeptical.
Don't make a skeptical out of this, Brian.
They eventually converge stories, so I'm going to read up to that point and then start the second series and then watch that until they watch it. I'm watching comics, guys.
I like that. You know, that's right.
But yeah, I'm just kind of bullshitting now, so I'll pass the torch.
Yes, torch! Torch the place! Pyro. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know. I thought
noise.
That sounded like wind. Anyway.
Come on.
let's burn this motherfucker down! Come on, Pookie! Sorry, I had to finish it. Anyway, speaking of Pookie, there hasn't been a whole lot going on for me. AmiAmi canceled my order because they're a bunch of jerks. So here's what happened. This is monk style. This is a crime. So my original order was just chalice and lock seat set 8. And I had a pass due notice on the day that Brian texted me about the apple changer going in. And they let me combine them, which they haven't let me do before. I tried to combine a pass due order with a new order once, and they didn't let me do it. So I was shocked they let me do that. And so anyway, I do that, and then the next day I go to check to pay it, because I knew that previous order was past due, and they didn't have it yet. So I was waiting on them to give me a new total. And then I go into my email box, and it says, your order is ready, June 29th, June 30th, it's canceled. They gave me, like, 24 hours, which I thought was ridiculous, because they said that it's still past due. I'm like, that's not fair, because I was waiting on you. You wasted, like, 36 hours putting it together. So I lost all those things. But I did get a figure at Zangetsu off there, so I was happy about that. Because I was happy. I'm like, yay, Zangetsu! And then I went into my orders and saw that order didn't exist and panicked, checked my emails. And so that was that. Other than that, I haven't really bought much. I did see the new movie turtle stuff today at Walmart, so I picked up Raph just because I wanted to buy one and see what they're like, and he's pretty neat. I kind of like the show figures better, but I think the Raph figure actually looks pretty badass. But I think that's it. I haven't really bought anything else or gotten anything else canceled on me. I hope not. And from now on, I'm just paying AmiAmi like individually. I'll just ship every item individually if they're going to be like that.
I've never had that happen before.
That was so annoying, because they usually don't let you combine. Because I tried one time, and I said, can I combine this? This is back when you couldn't do it manually. And I said, can I? He's like, no, it's past due. You can't combine it. So I didn't know. Now I'm upset. I'm more upset about Chalice than anything else. But anyway, your turn.
Okay, let me guide. Nope, that's not the sentence I was trying to say. No. Let me, guys, ask you a question now.
KK. Answer me now, Will.
And this is definitely probably those conflict each other. Something that Chenix will chime in on. But did you guys ever own Yu-Gi-Oh! Hexors when you were a kid?
I don't.
What are those?
It doesn't sound familiar.
They're these little metal hexagons with Yu-Gi-Oh monsters.
Oh yes, yes, I did.
Yes, big comfy couch moment right there.
I found mine the other day, and they have been sitting on my desk. I have no clue how to play this. I have the instruction guide right here, but the book is, like, so stiff, it feels like it's never been opened, so I don't think I've ever known how to play this. But I've just been, like, messing around with them. It's one of those weird things where they don't do anything, but I can't stop, like, playing with them. I don't know. That's kind of what I've been up to. I also watched I finally got around to watching the Wizard movie.
Oh, I meant to mention that Magical Economy 101 sounded like a Community episode.
That was my intention, actually.
Yes! Finally!
Yeah, because I really did like the whole idea of it, of this whole, like, world, you know, changing how it runs because of magic. Like, I liked the little practical things that they were using, like the telephone magic and stuff like that. Those were all really neat. But then I put, like, thought into it. I'm like, wait a minute, this mana system doesn't make sense to me at all.
I thought about that for a second when I was watching, but then I assumed it was just their life force that they were giving away. But it replenishes every day.
I'll give you a year to turn my hand into a phone.
It's like that movie with Justin Timberlake where Olivia Wilde was his mom. I never saw it. But he had, like, a clock on his arm, and Bryce Larkin was in it. I don't know.
It still doesn't entirely make a lot of sense to me.
I hate that Bryce Larkin.
What? Aside from that, the movie was okay. I didn't have, like, a big issue with it outside of what I had in my little post there. One thing I did notice, it was such a tone shift when they reveal, spoilers, the cauldron, the mana cauldron.
Oh, yeah.
It's completely made up of bodies, like corpses and stuff.
And the corpse had the ring on it?
Yeah. Disturbing. And I'm just like, wait, so... This really isn't like those people are fine, they've just been taken away thing. No, they killed them, and they're using their bodies to build this cauldron. I'm just like, this is actually kind of dark. Like, I hate using that word, but this is a really weird tone shift for this movie, because up until this point, it was kind of wacky. But, yeah.
I want you to do a follow-up analysis about the practicality of fishing mayonnaise. Advanced mayonnaise fishing.
That was another thing the movie kind of reminded me of, is how underutilized Nito was in the show. Yeah.
It made me didn't he have a storyline about fixing the driver in the show?
Yeah. I did notice along the way, I can't remember exactly what it was. Oh, the whole, like, when the plan was put into effect and everybody, all the wizards were dropping because their mana was being sucked out. I was wondering why Nito was being affected, and then I remembered, this movie established that this Nito actually does have mana, unlike the actual Nito, who, like, they established that his powers are different. He just, like, designed a different belt in this world. I don't know, I thought that was kind of neat that the movie did actually take some amount of time to explain away something that could have easily been a plot point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was fun.
I still like how the fucking... The two final rings just seriously just happen. Like, no...
Yeah, I noticed that occur. Too. Because I thought about you saying that when I started the movie, and then I forgot about it by the time it happened. I'm like, wait a minute, he just sort of pulled that ring out. What?
Like, it just happens. It's like Infinity Dragons. Like, what?
Been saving this one. I made it with science.
I did it with science. Okay, time to move on to our news.
Back to Yu-Gi-Oh! Hexagons.
Yeah.
You know what's funny about those is I remember owning them, but I don't remember buying them. I just had them all of a sudden. And they're like things where I don't find them all together. I'll find like one or two in a drawer or box, like in like miscellaneous things that I have.
Yeah, I found them in a small bag with my Dungeon Dice Monster figures.
I have those in the box still. I'll always find those. Like, I have this one just miscellaneous drawer of random stuff. And, like, I'll see one or two of them amongst all, like, the Burger King watches from the 90s. Like, the Jurassic Park ones and the Rugrats ones. A baby's got to do what a baby's got to do. Am I right? Baby's got to do it. I don't know. The point is, Rugrats. That was the news. Just so you guys know, that was all we had this week. There really wasn't much news this week.
There's a new space sheriff that no one cares about.
Well, can they just let this go? Seriously. Like, this is even past my...
This is a gold version of the Gavin bootleg suit from GoKai vs. Gavin.
But, like...
That's all it is.
It's past my whole, you know, annoyance of old stuff. It's like, it's not working. None of these reboots of the older franchise are working too well for them. They can't let it go.
They are going to keep trying until it works. It'll never work.
So unfortunately, they're going to start running into the even more obscure series eventually.
They're going to bring back, like, the Beetleborgs, but they're going to use that third one that we couldn't adapt because it was like Barney meets Beetleborgs. I want to see what Saban would have done. Like, Art made them Beetleborgs babies. I don't know.
Beetleborg baby.
I don't know, but that would have been funny.
That's really about it. Everyone's freaking out because, was it Comic-Con itself? Or I don't remember when they said that Lord Zedd was going to be a Comic-Con exclusive.
But he's just available there first.
Yeah, people were just freaking out anyway because...
Just like the MMPR figures, they're always available first at some con. It's not like you're not going to be able to get it. We have the Super Legends figure anyway, settle down. So it's like everyone's like, we're finally getting a Titanium Ranger figure. This is like the third one, bro.
Yeah, the original one, the Super Legends one, and then this one.
And there's probably, I think there was a couple other random little, you know, bikes and weird gimmicks, I don't know. He used to run off into the sunset with his girl run.
I seriously think that's it, like... It was a pretty awful week.
Yeah. Look, there's quite a bit of shows and whatnot to talk about. By quite a bit, I mean Korra.
Just going to do a segue, but that's okay. Let's just talk about Ramble Time. Go into Ramble Time. Let's talk about Ramble Time.
All I was going to say is sweeping declaration that we're going to have a longer discussion about Korra than Tokyo Drift calling it now. That's all I was going to say.
You know what I like about Ramble Time?
That we do
it comes after Superhero Time. Segway.
Superhero Time.
Oh, great.
Tokuger and...
No, my headset's running out of batteries.
It makes that really annoying beep in your ear.
Yeah. I thought there was a weather alert. Now I can't find where I put the damn thing. Hold on, guys.
No.
But we do Tokuger first anyway. Go ahead.
Okay. So this is Tokuger episode 18. I guess I'll fill the shoes. It was a thing that I watched with my eyeballs.
That's what Brian says before sex. I guess I'll fill the thing.
Ultimately, I really didn't have too many issues with the episode. I continue to like, I guess I'll call him by his normal name now, Akira's
roll that R,
kind of hijinks, I guess. I don't even want to say hijinks. It's not the white word.
Brian, you're so racist.
I am. I don't know. I seriously just watched this like 2 hours ago. I should have more in my mind, but I really don't have a whole lot. Someone on my Ask FM mentioned like an idea of Grita becoming a purple, and then I noticed that Zedd has a purple scarf. So then I kind of thought about it, but I don't know if they're actually going to ever amount to that or anything, but we'll see what happens on that front. But bouncing back to our actual real new
Ranger. I think it's going to be like a red herring situation like with Gold Ranger, but it's going to end up being three oiled up triplets. Like, we're gonna say, is it Grita? Is it Zedd? Is it Ticket? No, it's three oiled up triplets that Kevin was way too excited to meet. He was shaking.
Smiley faces on Twitter, and it's really weird.
He was shaking when he was holding their golden power staff. They share one, which is even creepier.
They're all connected.
Sex.
You guys are getting really lazy with these jokes.
Okay. Help me out here.
Who?
Somebody. Give me something to say.
I liked the line at the end when he said, I have to continue fighting with nobody knowing about it. Ducati's like, but we all know about it. I thought that was funny.
Hikari was kind of a jackass.
I think he was right to be skeptical.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, like, out of character or even, like, out of, like, humanity. I mean, it's... I would like to say I would probably feel the same way.
No, because I watched it not too long ago either, and I was a bit confused, like, because Hikari didn't trust him, and then after Zed was able to turn him into a shadow so easily, he said, see, I was right to be suspicious, and then he trusted him. I can't remember what was that moment when he's like, man, I guess.
Because
friendship?
Because he was so relieved that Wright continued to trust him no matter what, that he had to trust him.
It was really stupid.
Oh, that's really dumb. I thought maybe I missed something important.
No, yeah. It was just because he turned back into a shadow and Wright was like, no, he's still a good person. And then Hikari was just like, I give up. I'm done. Whatever. Do what you want.
There is no common sense among... There's no common sense.
I love the comedic, like, thump. Like, it made it sound like you almost just got up and walked away. You just hear a door slamming. All three at once.
Go ahead, Arizal.
Oh, I was just going to say, you guys remember how everyone got really upset with Daigo because they thought he got too much attention or just stuff like that. I don't know. Like, I never felt that way towards Daigo. I'm feeling that way towards Wright. I hate Wright. I really do. I do not like him.
I don't like him either.
I think it's a situation because Daigo, to me, was an incredibly likable character. Whereas Wright kind of has that Gentaro thing going on that just doesn't really gel with me, and I don't like him at all. I really don't like Wright.
He's just so annoying, and he's kind of a dick, and his lips are red. I'm like, bitch, wipe that Kool-Aid off. Yeah. Yeah, I agree about the Kool-Aid. I mean, those other points were okay, but the Kool-Aid? Seriously, bro.
Well, part of it for me is that whenever there's a dilemma, whenever there's any sort of argument between Wright and any of the other team members, Wright's reasoning is never really that sound. It's never very good. But he's always portrayed as the one that's right. No pun intended at all. He's always portrayed as the one who is correct.
I think they probably intended the pun.
And that's really frustrating, especially when he's up against someone, I shouldn't say against, but especially when he's arguing with someone like Hikari, who is approaching this somewhat rationally. But, you know, the rational approach is the one that gets discarded. No, we have to just blindly trust this guy. It's frustrating when Wright, who is the most flawed person on the team, is the one who's portrayed as being the best. That's annoying.
And, oh, go ahead. I'm back. No.
I was just thinking, like, I don't want to be one of those guys.
Yeah, Brian.
The message behind that is kind of a little bit skewed. Like, they're essentially teaching kids, like, trust everyone ever.
That's what Forze was like, trust murderers.
And, I mean, I get, like, the sort of uppity, happy attitude connecting with kids, but I wouldn't really say it's probably the best message to send them, but
they're like Japan's motto, talk to strangers, what could go wrong? That's what I'm gonna assume. But you know, with the episode in general, I guess with these past two, something just felt really off to me about his introduction. Like, it's just not fitting for me.
Yeah.
Like, this episode could have been a good way of easing it into it with them trying to accept him. Because even Wright was really, like, acceptance of him last week was really weird. It could have been more like, I see potential in him, but not such an instant trust. And this episode could have been more of a transition, and instead it just felt forced. Like, they're like, we don't want him, we don't want him. Yes, you do, yes, you do. Okay, we'll take him. That was essentially what happened. And it just feels really strange. Like, he feels this, like, this weird fragment on Totokuzer. So, I don't know.
I think what's probably the most strange is that the way that they're portraying Akira is kind of like this really parody of a badass character, but to the point where he's still kind of, in essence, is supposed to be a badass character. But because of the fact that they're kind of making fun at the character archetype to match Tokuger's tone, it's a really weird off balance because he's got that feel of a badass character in the setting of Tokuger, which is goofy and weird. And so his character's kind of just going on this back and forth teeter-totter of what he's supposed to be like. And it's kind of strange, like, because there's times I really like him. I'm like, you're a cool character, and then he, like, says something about dying again, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I think I really agree with that. I think that's kind of perfectly describes it. Like, it's kind of, they're caught between trying to do two different things. I kind of wish they'd found a better balance. Like, I kind of enjoy the little throwaway lines like the I have to be a loner, even though everyone already knows. That's kind of funny, and that doesn't take away anything. But maybe they could have not made his backstory a joke. Like, it's a fairly cliche backstory, but we haven't really seen one exactly like that, where it was literally just a former monster becoming a ranger. It was always something like Zenaku being cursed, or Dragon Ranger being really misinformed. and really so stupid. It still would have been different. Like, they still could have done some funny, like, things with him, but not made his backstory stupid. Like, I want something that I can invest in a little bit. Not everything doesn't have to be a joke.
And I'm about to use Ghost Ranger as a positive example, but
it's going to be good.
Ghost Ranger was a series that had a
Tenso.
Much more lighthearted team, core team, but introduced a sixth ranger who was not that way, who was a very serious kind of gruffer, I don't want to say person, but person. And that, while Ghost Ranger wasn't great, did work to an extent. I never really had that much of an issue there. So, I don't know. I do agree with what you're saying, where his personality is sort of conflicting. Like you said, they're sort of teeter-tottering between, you know, he is this really cool character, but he's also this parody of a really cool character kind of thing. I think if they would have just stuck with maybe just being the cool character, it could have still worked, even though Tokuger is so goofy. There's no reason why it couldn't still work. And like Dawson just said, I do wish the backstory was more fleshed out and wasn't a joke, because I like the idea of it. I really do, but it didn't really amount to much.
Yeah.
I think overall it's kind of more or less a bummer, because I really want to like him, and honestly I think I do like him, but it's just the way that they're kind of portraying it right now I don't fully enjoy. Hopefully it balances out at the end, but I don't think it's going to, but hopefully they prove me wrong.
And I like him as well. I mean, I mentioned last week where he was kind of the only positive thing I had to say about last week's episode, because I do like his shtick. if they want to stick with one or the other, I wouldn't mind one or the other. Because I do actually kind of like the idea of someone parroting, you know, the cool character. Because I think those moments where he's like talking about dying or talking about these being his final moments are funny. I think those are those are amusing, but like you said, it's conflicting.
Mm-hmm. At least the one positive thing is, even though I've been really mixed about these episodes, at least I've been more engaged in it these last 2 weeks. Like, when I'm watching it, I'm thinking about the episode more and, you know, actually watching it as opposed to the every other, like, dumb plots we've been getting. At least something's happening, I think, is my point. And now I'm worried nothing's going to happen again.
Maybe.
It's like when Mega Silver showed up. I'm like, oh, look, something happened. Oh, no, that was just some gas. And that's essentially how Mega Ranger happened. One other thing I thought was funny was he has Brian's fighting style in Uncharted. He throws the weapon and just attacks him. That was exactly what Brian did. I'm like, Brian, are you going to shoot these guys? And all of a sudden, Brian's jumping over me. And then he punches this guy. That's how Brian plays Uncharted. He runs at people with machine guns and just starts punching them.
I was playing Rise of the Dark Spark the other day. And I was in an area with a lot of Insecticons. And, I mean, it's not worth wasting bullets on Insecticons. So I'm just sitting there, like, punching them. And Kat's watching me and goes, why don't you just shoot them? I'm like, that's not my thing.
My thing is punching.
Meanwhile, I run up to an Autobot and punch him in the face. I'm like, this is how I play video games. I suck at aiming, so I just punch them.
This is a kind of a more shallow thing I was curious about. Did we ever get any sort of confirmation on whether or not he can switch colors?
He cannot, as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
The Build Russia in the Tokyo Changer just says, like, Tokyo Ichigo Builder, and not, like, orange or anything like that. And there's no sort of color-changing function on the Apply Changer, so it's pretty safe to assume he doesn't. And they actually haven't changed lines all that much since toward the beginning of the show. I think I'm hoping they kind of realize that the gimmick was kind of really stupid.
They probably don't want to do it to make Orange feel left out now.
The past couple times they did it, it had a fairly decent purpose.
It seems odd that they would not include that.
Right.
It does. It would have been kind of neat to see, too, I think. I still think the whole gimmick would have been cooler if each of the suits had different powers. Like when in the Disney seasons when they all had different powers.
Yeah, because I like the idea of the gimmick. I think it was just heavily underthought out. I don't even want to say underutilized, because the couple of times they did use it, it served a fairly decent purpose. But there was so much that they could have did with an idea like this that they didn't. It's just it's basically a colorful version of switching weapons, and it's, you know, it's kind of it's whatever it is. But I did really enjoy the fight scene in this episode because he has my fighting style, and I like he threw the Yudo Breaker and just ran him and just punched him like off the ledge, and then he gets up. He's like, "Oh, there it is!" And then he runs after. I thought that was fun. Zed, I think, was a little bit interesting in this episode. He is, I think he's on some sort of drug. I don't know what to think of this guy. I really don't. But
I think he's just high constantly, and he sees lights, and he wants to find them.
He sees the color.
He's really into Kira.
Shining.
Seriously into Kira. Like, it's
all of obsession. All of Tokyo is just Zed's fever dream.
Calling it now.
He finally caught on to Schwartz's moderately backstabbing nonsense.
Moderately backstabbing nonsense. Sounds
he
evil.
He like wasn't doing anything wrong. He was just kind of hoarding darkness.
Like Pope.
That sounds so weird.
You, that's stop hoarding darkness.
That's what goth people do when they brood.
Look at all, like, this dark you have around you.
You can
give me some of it.
You can tell how much dark they have by how many straps are hanging down from their pants.
Yes, I think that's a sign, a symbol. It's a symbol to move on.
Yep, it's that guy. Okay, Gaim. So this was the week we've been waiting for. Michi finally revealed himself to be a little shit. And you know, we weren't sure how it was going to happen. It could have been, you know, maybe he was fighting him and he demorphed him. Maybe he witnessed Michi being a shit. But no, Michi just came out and told him.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that we, for so long, we have been kind of expecting it to be this thing where Michi sort of got caught red-handed. But yeah, it ended up just being Michi played his hand, which I guess we weren't really expecting.
And there was the whole conversation with Mai, I think, made him want to finally do it. Like, because we talked about how Mai was just an excuse, and I still think she was, but I still think he wants her, obviously. And yeah, he decided, finally, you know what, let's kill Kota, because he is Hope, and I want to kill Hope. Damn, Michi sucks. It's like, you guys are such a downer, man. Like, but I like the way the scene was done. Like, I thought it was kind of funny. It was dramatic, but it was funny the way Kota's like, they're talking about Hope, and Kota's like, well, all you can do, you just gotta keep hoping. Oh, fuck! And he just like, did you just kick me in the face? Like, Kota's just talking, like he's having a normal conversation with his best friend, and Michi just casually walks up to him and kicks him in the face. That's how Michi revealed himself.
It's not even a punch, it's a kick.
Yeah, it was like, because he was crouched down, and then he punched him. And it was surprising for him, obviously.
Yeah. Like, what I find interesting about the scene, though, is because Michi's going on, he's monologuing this whole time while he's just punching Kota and then transforming and stuff. And he's talking about how this idea of Hope has, like,
killed people.
Yeah, it's Kota has been, like, infected with this idea of Hope, and he's spreading around to all of the people that they care about like a plague.
Boy,
and how he's talking about how he's completely delusional, and how, you know, he killed Yuya to save Mai, and how that's something he should be proud of. He did the best thing in the worst possible situation. And it's interesting because it's, we have been talking for weeks and weeks and weeks about how Michi is just so crazy. He's, you know, delusional and stuff like that. And now here's Michi kind of laying out everything from his point of view. And he does. He sees Kota as the bad guy. He sees Kota as this person who is deranged, who is, you know, driving all of the people he cares about to their deaths. And that this is something that Michi has to do. He has to take care of Kota. I just found it so interesting. I love his... Well, I love pretty much everything. Every scene with Michi in this episode is great. He comes off very culty.
With his suit. He suited up. good.
We do this a lot, but his actor just does such a good fucking job in his role. He really does.
And you know, it's funny, when he was talking about how Kota should be proud of that, I agreed with him. And I think Kota essentially came to the same conclusion. He was just he had a lot more sympathy about killing another person, or regret about killing a person, than Michi would. Michi would have been like, whatevs, what's gotta do, baby's gotta do what a baby's gotta do. But, Kota essentially came to the same conclusion, I think, where he accepted it. You know, he saved Mai, and he was gonna carry on, and hope that his friend would watch over him, and he came to the same conclusion. He just had normal human remorse about it.
I think that's the scariest part about Michi, about this whole scene, is that when he is laying it all out like that, he does have some legitimate points. Like, you can see where he's coming from. It's not completely insane. It is a little bit deranged, but it's not like, you know, it's like you said, you know, you kind of agree with him when he says that he did the best possible thing in the worst possible situation and that he should feel good about that. But, you know, it's
the presentation.
Yeah.
kicking him in the face while saying it isn't making it better. And I also really liked the stuff he was saying to Coda, like, about how he used to admire him so much and he was so mad. So you get the feeling that on top of him hating Coda now, I think he hates that he hates him in a way, because he really did like Coda once upon a time. Remember when he used to throw him lock seeds? Good times.
Coda-san.
But I mean, you don't forget about that, but you have to really think about that, is that he really was his friend. I mean, in the beginning, he was very manipulative and questioning, but he very clearly was Coda's friend. And I like that he hates him, and he also hates that he hates him at the same time. I don't think he necessarily wanted Coda to be his enemy like this, but he's got no problems with taking him out, obviously. I also thought it was interesting that before the scene happened, also Baron and Marika essentially tried to tell Coda, and he dismissed them just like that he would. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I don't blame Coda for doing that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, I always kind of talked about how I thought Coda would believe him, but the more I thought about it in this episode, with the way Coda was speaking to Michi before he started kicking him, I can see why Coda wouldn't suspect Michi. Because, I mean, he sees him as a friend, and something that Baron pointed out was that he hasn't been around a lot, which I don't think Coda found suspicious, because Coda's been pretty preoccupied. And whenever Michi is around, he would pretend to be helping. So he'd be like, hey, I'm going to go scout this or do that. So Michi hasn't been around, and when he wasn't, Coda had no reason to think that he was trying to kill him.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see why he wouldn't believe him. You always get such a weird perspective when you're the viewer, because you can see everything. You see everybody's perspective. Yeah. So you're like, are you not watching this?
Honestly, I think that's part of why Gaim is so much fun sometimes, because normally it would be a mystery as to who's the villain and who's doing all these things, but no, we have followed Michi all this time and seen him do these things, so you know, we already know. We already know everything that's going on that has been put in front of us. It's just, you know, taking the time to watch the characters slowly find out. I attribute Coda not really believing Kaido to, you know, he's best friends with Michi. He's also very good friends with Kaido. So it would be like you coming up to me and telling me that Brian has developed a secret plot to overthrow us and, you know, he's now been, you know, turned evil.
I
would be like, yeah, okay, Dawson, whatever. And I'd like laugh it off. Like, why are you telling me this? This is ridiculous. You know, he trusts both of them. So it's not something he would even like take the time to think about.
I can't wait till, I hope that he finds out that Michi shot him. I mean, obviously he's shocked. He's seen that Michi's realized that Michi tried to kill him as Zangetsu, but I'm curious his reaction when he finds out that he, you know, shot him in the back. Speaking of that, though, well, not the shooting in the back, but through the whole scene when Michi was monologuing and beating him up and transforming, it was really sad for Coda, because he was like, he just had the state of shock. Like, he didn't want to believe it. Like, he could hardly even say anything other than Michi's name. It was like sex, but in reverse. That doesn't even make sense. But it was really sad, because Coda was seeing his best friend like that, and he was realizing that not only was he having all these thoughts, but he was the imposter Zangetsu that had tried to kill him. And in the fights, Zangetsu was very brutal. I think I mentioned that during the fight. Like, I've never seen really be that incredibly brutal, where he was just pounding him with the sonic arrow. That sounds dirty, but he was. And and then realizing, like, what the fuck happened to my friend Takator? Like, all those at once, like, he literally waited until the last second to even fight back when Michi was, like, shooting him. Like, he did not want to have to fight.
Even then, it was solely to protect his life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I should mention, because we mentioned how Michi's actor is so good at what he does. I think Koda's actor is great, too.
Oh, yeah.
He expresses so well in those scenes where he's either really happy or just, like, completely broken or in shock like he is now.
When he found out about Yuya, too. He's done a really great job.
Because it's like, you watch him during these scenes and he looks like he's almost about to cry. He's kind of shaking. He just doesn't, he's trying to comprehend everything that's going on. yeah, I think altogether the scene was really good. I was like, even I was shaking during, like, while watching the episode. Cause I'm like, I know it's like the episode is going to end pretty soon, but this is so good.
I know.
So good. And I'm going to hate waiting. I put on Twitter how I got to get my mind off of Gaim. And I had a couple of people ask me whether or not I thought the episode was bad. I'm like, no, I'm just going to drive myself insane waiting if I keep thinking about it.
Waiting is the worst.
Well, and you know, with the Michi Koda confrontation was obviously the main thing, but there was actually several other major things that happened. Yeah. One was the entire world is now infested, which I was thinking about this today, with the exception of, I think, maybe Blade when the battle fight restarted because he protected Chalice. I think that spread worldwide. But this is the only other time I can think of where the conflict has gone worldwide. I don't ever remember it ever being this big in another series where it spread over the whole world and they showed generic American locations.
Yeah.
I don't even remember if they showed clips in Blade of it going worldwide, but that's the only thing that I could think of that had that type of scale. Because usually it's, you know, sequestered to the city or they're in, or Japan, and I'm like, holy crap, that's crazy, and there's no other armored riders to fight anywhere else. I saw someone said, well, wouldn't the other riders from the other series protect it? I'm like, no, they're from different universes, and even if they were, they'd be fighting like 14-year-old girls over a cookie. So they don't have time. But so that's crazy that the whole world is essentially in this now. And then
go ahead. I was gonna say, it feels like, it does actually feel pressing. Like,
yeah,
it feels like a pressing matter, because we've seen that happen in other shows. You mentioned Blade. They've also done it in like a couple of Sentai here and there, but it's usually not like the end game episodes. It's the like really early episodes, and they're kind of silly.
So
you don't have this sort of pressure to go along with it. But here it's like, this is stuff you should be seeing in the final episodes, episode 35.
Yeah, because we have this whole arc and we're in this whole like sort of dystopian mode where like everything's deserted and all this crazy stuff's happening, and like you said, that usually doesn't happen to the last few. And the other thing, which, well, I consider to be sort of a major thing, is that Zangetsu finally made it home. Homeward Bound 3, Zangetsu's Journey. Takator's back. I love how it happened. I love how he was able to witness Michi's craziness, because it's a perfect way of essentially accomplishing things at once, where Koda and him got to see that happening, and Takatora got another layer of it because he realized that Michi took his driver and has been impersonating him.
Bitch has my belt.
And also, I think a lot of it, Michi's behavior with the putting on the suit and, you know, before he confronted Koda, like taking that desk and wanting to save his friends and acting like he was in charge, I think that very much goes with what I talked about a while back about how Michi wanted to stand up on his own and prove that he was better because of all the plans Takatora told him about. And I think Takatora seeing that was great, because I think Michi really is like relishing in being the head of the family, essentially. So I thought that was kind of perfect. And also, I love how whenever Takatora kept trying to talk to Gaim, there was somebody else there, and he was like, he didn't want to talk to him. Yeah. Like, it reminded me of when I'm toy hunting, and I see there's somebody else in front of the section I want to be in, so I leave and come back, and then there's still somebody there. That's exactly what it was like. Like, he was like, oh, crap, he's talking to that bitch Marika. She tried to kill me. All right, what's now? Damn it, Michi, I just want to talk to my best friend.
Another thing that I also found funny is that I got a couple questions, and it was a joke on Twitter for a while on what happened to Rat. And then he just kind of appears with a girl I didn't recognize at all.
She was one of the other dance members.
Here, and I'm like, is that Rat? Because I honestly couldn't remember what he looked like.
I was like, is that Rat? And then Jed Jackson tackled him and said, Rat! I'm like, that must be him.
I wrote down some notes for this episode to just kind of cover. And one of them, the second one on here is, oh, hey, Rat's here.
And Michi's going to save him. How, like, disturbing and cold is that, that he pulled his friends out of life-sucking treatment, and he's like, fuck it, I'm leaving Kota's sister there.
That's how much he hates him.
Bitch got to go. I know, that's crazy.
And, like, it's just, it's so, like, mentally disturbing, almost, that this kid has this mentality that he's like, well, okay, I'll save them, and then we can save Mai, and we'll go get Chucky, or whatever the fuck her name is, the one other one that's hanging out with Mai right now.
Chucky.
And then Teen Guy will be safe, and we can go be besties again.
And we can repopulate the world with street dancers.
Like, he selfishly only wants him and his friends to be okay so that they can continue to be happy together. But dum. That's all I got. It's really, when you like actually break it down, it's really
disturbing.
I wanted to mention earlier, so apparently America is just blown up.
I didn't get the memo.
Yeah, because I didn't mention this last week, but when all of the missiles just sort of poofed away, I was thinking in the back of my head, like, wouldn't it be crazy if he just sort of redirected them somewhere? I cut to this episode. Yeah, he redirected them all to America.
Ron Swanson's going to be pissed.
I see how it is, Toey.
They're doing it because we ruined all their series with Power Rangers. They're mad that the Gokaiger cast have been retroactively replaced by our actors. That's exactly, it's revenge. That's what happened. But that's just another thing that adds to the weight of it. That's crazy. And it was kind of, for lack of better wording, casually mentioned. Like, it was glossed over so quickly.
Yeah. They like, brought it up America's a couple of times, but yeah, it was. It was quick.
Like, you had to, you know, rewind to say, did I read that right? America's blown. Let me check my window. Are we okay? I like how the first place that the forest invaded was French. I almost said French, like, not the place. They invaded French. I'm like, oh, it's okay. You can have them. Brian doesn't like them. They think they're so cool with their baguettes. See?
Baguettes? Excuse me. But all of that sort of ties into something that we haven't really brought up yet, just in the past few weeks, that where we are at, that's what I'm trying to say, where we're at now in the show has this very, not post-apocalyptic feel, but kind of similar to that, where the city's completely vacant, it's overrun by all these creatures. You see Mai walk through a store and it's just, you know,
looting.
It's been ransacked.
Walker's coming up behind her. Glenn's there with his hat.
But yeah, I just think it's so interesting because we've been watching this show and it seems like every, you know, 10 to 15 episodes, the whole tone of the show just completely shifts. And suddenly we're in just like a completely different series. We had, you know, dancing kids, and then we had this whole like like little just Coda trying to figure out what's going on with Yggdrasil and the forest and, you know, the whole mystery going on. Then and now it's like this like ragtag group of people just trying to survive and take back, you know, the city. It's crazy. It's kind of cool.
Know. We've never had it like that before. And then, meanwhile, I bet Zach's sitting here in the back, bet they don't think it's the beat writers now. That was his reaction to America being blown up. Like, all he cares about was the beat writers' reputation.
Zach's personal win.
He does the baby victory meme. World's blown up. Least it wasn't the beat writers.
He like nudges Bravo in the ribs.
See, I told you. I was trying to think if there's anything else to mention. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I legitimately forgot that Marika helped kill Zangetsu, or, you know, not kill him.
Yeah.
Because so much has happened. I even forgot Ryoma was a thing for a while. It's kind of like with when Bravo and them disappear. It's like so much is happening on Gaim. You don't really have time to think about them. And since he flew off and blasted off again, I forgot he was a thing. Like, and I forgot she was helping. So it'll be interesting when Tagatora comes back and finding out that she's sort of been helping. And when Coda finds out that she helped kill him. So that should be interesting.
I am glad that they, as writers, remembered that, though. Because it would be kind of weird just to see Zangetsu run up to Coda and, you know, Yoko be there. And it's like...
I love how excited
you know,
he was
this is
kind of
awkward.
He's like, oh, Coda! And what that bitch doing there?
He's all up on my man! We haven't gotten an enormous amount of screen time between them, but I really liked their friendship. Like, I like the way their relationship happened. That sounds really weird to say, but I just love the way it evolved, and I definitely hope they're allies after this. I don't think he's too pleased with Michi. So I just like the way that happened. Like, we've mentioned this at least 5 times, how we never would have guessed that the character that sounded like the sidekick to Gaim would be one of the main villains. And I never thought that Zangetsu, you know, would have been one of the main allies when we started. Everybody's in a different place.
Well, heck, from the beginning of the series to now, Zangetsu's just this, like, homeless guy wandering around the city, kind of, you know, looking at everything that's happened to it. And, you know, I like that he doesn't say it very extensively, but you do kind of recognize that he feels guilty. Because why wouldn't he?
He mentioned that he was upset they couldn't save the city.
I like how Zangetsu has had kind of his own little arc, despite the fact that he, as a character, doesn't really say that much. He's actually a pretty quiet guy.
And he disappears a lot.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see where he's gone to over different points of the series.
And it's interesting when you compare him and Michi from what we know at the beginning. It's like on the surface, based on descriptions in the beginning, Michi was like this generic good guy. And when you peel it back, he ended up being a psychopath that was willing to take the Earth down so long as he would survive. And Zangetsu was very mysterious and from all appearances, from what little we knew, was a villain. And then when you peel it back, you find out that he was just trying to save the world. And he thought that the only way to do it was that. And immediately when he found a better way, he turned his back on, you know, killing people. And I just think it's interesting that they ended up being essentially opposites of what you originally thought. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Can't wait to see the confrontation next week. And the next confrontation. Every week's a confrontation with me and Gaim. It's just too much.
There's a certain rumor going around about the battle that I really want to happen. And so it'll be interesting to see whether that does or not. But actually, it's going to be a while till we find out, because we have the next episode, and then the episode after that is the the soccer episode.
At least it's not the next episode now.
Yeah that would be unbearable.
Yeah, that would be too much. We would have to riot. Like, we would have to get that petition going. We'd even have to form an alliance with Coconut to take this down.
The one thankful thing about these somewhat intrusive specials is that they are placed in parts of the series where it's not too unbearable. But yeah, it sucks. I mean,
except for the I always forget his name.
Kikaider.
Robot. Yeah.
Kikaider.
It wasn't that like crucial of a cliffhanger, but it was extremely awkwardly placed. To the fact where they had to say 2 weeks earlier this happened, but not really. So it'll be interesting to see where this falls, especially since he's interrupting himself to advertise himself. Allow myself to introduce myself. Yep. We're so exhausted after talking about Guy.
Well,
it's a long process.
Man, somebody moved. Somebody.
That was
moved.
Me.
Oh.
I was trying to figure out what Maymay was doing.
Sorry, we're just a bit of traffic. It's not as heavy this week.
Okay, I'm going back. Okay,
fine. I love that there was at least one person who was like, Michi, why are you in a suit?
Why are you in a suit, dude?
Like, hey, everything's going to shit. When did you have time to go shopping?
For a while there, I kept forgetting that Coda and everyone still do not know that Michi and Takatora are actually brothers.
Yeah, I thought about that too when he asked what happened to the real Takatora. I'm like, oh shit, he doesn't know they're related.
Yeah,
that's like a crazy thing.
I'm curious to see if that comes up next week, just because of what's apparently going to happen next week.
I hope it does, if the brothers are going to be confronting each other. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. It's kind of crazy to think that he didn't know that those two who are our main characters were related for the entire series, essentially.
Yeah.
They did good. This confrontation's been practically 35 episodes in the making. All right. I think we spent enough time on that.
Yeah.
Clearly. Whatever. That's all I really have to say on. There was a new theme song, and it is weird and very not Garo.
I got so caught up in reading something on Twitter that I forgot that we were even doing Garo. Yeah, I don't like the new theme song. Which is surprising because I tend to actually really like Garo's music.
Like, I like it, but it doesn't seem like Garo at all. It seems really off and strange. And I don't like it. Even though I just said I liked it. You know what I mean? No, you don't.
Okay, so the big problem I have is that it's basically a long way of just getting around to the very generic plot point of Mayuri's not a tool, she's a human. She's a human, guys, she feels emotion. Which is basically all that's happened this series. Is that being shoved back in our faces over and over again. Admittedly, this episode does a little bit better than the previous times it's been brought up, but it's frustrating when that's what Garo is, like, reduced to. something that is, it's a very generic plot point that you would see in like a shonen anime or a really bad Sentai. I feel like I've seen that in some of the Sentai that we don't like, but it's frustrating because it's really not interesting and it feels so forced.
This season has got to do something. Like, it's just right now it's doing so little outside of what you just mentioned about Mahiri that it's not really all that entertaining. Like, I'll enjoy the fight scenes sometimes, but outside of that, there isn't enough substance.
When the fight scenes happen, they're good. Yeah. Sometimes they just don't happen at all.
Yeah, sometimes they don't happen.
In fact, last week, I don't think Garo even transformed. But,
I don't even fucking remember last week. I really don't.
It's frustrating because this episode kind of centered around Crow's clan. and it's the ceremony that they were doing. They were using this magical beast that would cleanse the malevolence within their swords. Sort of like what we saw earlier in the series with Garo in his suit and everything. Mm-hmm. And sort of very much like Mayuri's powers. Okay, that's fine. You're kind of tying these things together. That's cool. And I like when Garo world builds. That's great. But they didn't do much of it at all. It was so shallow and so brief because we get a little bit of it where these knights are, you know, performing the ceremony and then one of them sweats into a pit.
It's really stupid when you say it out loud.
And then they all die. And that's it. And that's really frustrating because what I feel should have been a Crow-centered episode turned into a Mayuri episode, which just went to, you know, again, beating the same message into our heads. And I get it. She's human. She feels, guys. She really does. And it's also frustrating because towards the end, when she tries to activate her powers, and what she said was that she was going to merge with the beast or something like that. I'm like, this could actually be really cool. This could actually, like, change things within the series. You know, Mayuri's actually doing something neat. And then they stop her, and they just, you know, kill it. Whatever. I'm just like, what? She could have finally gotten to do something.
She could have, like, got wings or, like, swords or some shit. She could have turned into a badass. But no, they stopped her because she was going to die or something like that.
Why would you want to stay alive when you couldn't have swords or wings or shit? Am I right, Brian?
I know, right? You're absolutely correct.
Despite this apparently being somewhat plot related, I guess, it fell really flat. And even though next week looks like it's going to be, you know, not next week because we don't have one next week, but the next episode looks like it's going to be more plot related, I really am skeptical. I'm really skeptical about that. I'm really skeptical about that.
Thanks, asshole. it was boring.
An incredible back and forth between Brian and Aerosol.
Mimi's trying to use the side of the couch as a giant toy, and I'm not sure how to get her to stop.
Just use your evil skills.
Evil!
Evil skills?
I don't know. Sometimes I just say stuff.
Okay.
I'm an attacker. Stop!
Brian, stop being a cat lady. We're trying to watch. Wait, we're not trying to watch. That doesn't make any sense. Don't listen to me.
I never do.
I'm just a mental patient in the corner of this place.
Because now it's time for Ramble Time.
Shit. I was going to do, and then a cough came out.
That's a new one.
This is the sickly version.
Okay.
So, this week Brian's taking charge. Let me sit down. Wait, I'm already sitting. Let me sit further.
I don't have anything to say regarding Pokemon, so...
Neither do I. I don't remember what it's about.
The Toidles had a lot going on.
Oh yeah, Cry turned into Slytherin. Shredder put the hat on her and it said, Slytherin! I don't know how the hat doesn't sound like that. But the turtles got Gryffindor, so... Controversy.
Okay, and Splinter then.
Hufflepuff.
I really like this episode. I really like this episode.
It was really good.
It was terrible at Jump the Snake. I'm just kidding.
You know, when she was put into that thing over the Mugen pit, like, you knew she was going in. Of course she's going in. It was still a really cool kind of moment. I really like that scene because it sort of mirrors Splinter and Shredder's backstory. Where, you know, someone that they both love has now been, you know, injured or whatever, essentially taken away from them. And then the whole place, you know, starts to burn to the ground and...
Shredder's blaming him again.
The music that they start playing during that scene I was a real sucker for it, for the scene. I really liked it.
And wasn't there a thing, which I didn't remember until Kiefer mentioned, I think, about some sort of toyless thing that said, like, Mutant Cry or something?
That's what he said. I never heard of that. This came out completely left field to me.
But... Like, when I remember, he mentioned it sort of, and I sort of remembered it, like, before I saw the episode, because I didn't watch it live because I forgot about it. And then I saw, no one spoiled it, people were having reactions, like, with emoticons and stuff. So I assumed she mutated. And for some reason, I thought she was going to become a turtle and she was going to be their Venus. Up until he poured the snake DNA in it. I don't know why, but that's what I was thinking until they specifically poured the snake DNA. Which was...
That would have been terrible.
And the snake thing was like a really cruel way of thinking by Shredder. Yeah. They're going to become evil snakes and eat their dad, essentially. Shredder's pissed because he didn't get chosen on The Bachelor because the other girl gave Splinter the final rose. That's my version. They were on The Bachelor together.
I do appreciate the extended backstory for the two and everything. The fact that apparently Shredder was just adopted into his clan and... they grew up together. They were brothers, essentially.
It was kind of like Loki and Thor. Except Shredder's a lot less witty about everything.
Every time I see one of these backstories, though, it just makes me question when all of this was supposed to take place. Because obviously, you know, Splinter's wife was killed. However... long ago, Karai is old. God, that sentence is really bad. Oh,
it was magical.
Karai is old.
But, you know, you see the scenes of them growing up, and it gives you this idea that it was like feudal Japan. I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
So you didn't see the thing before the beginning of the episode where they said, centuries ago in Japan, Splinter and Shredder defeated the Nylock monsters. But yeah, that does kind of conflict with each other. In one of the reviews I read, someone said it might have been cool to have like a whole episode that was just dedicated to their backstory, which I think would have been cool. Just to get a little more backstory. Because essentially they said he was raised as my brother, and then as soon as he found out he was from another clan, he was like, fuck this, and became evil. That's essentially what it sounded like.
I would still like to see something, like if they do that sometime down the line where it's just an episode dedicated to it, because, yeah, it does seem like there should be more to it than just, oh, I'm from a different clan, I'm adopted, well, I guess I'm evil now.
Fuck adoption. I guess this is my life now. Might as well embrace it. Give me a claw. What was I supposed to say about that?
It'll be interesting to see what happens, because
she can control it.
Yeah, like it was weird. Something happened to where she can mutate into like her normal ugly ass self. But she's got like snake things, like she's got the snake eyes and like fangs and shit, which makes her uglier. But
snake fangs,
snake weed. We already have a snake monster. What are they doing?
Yeah, they're running out of ideas.
He's not a snake.
He's a weed.
He's weeds.
But he's snake-ish.
Snake weed. Snake is in his name.
Snake confirmed. This is like me with the Sour Patch Kids. It said Sour Patch Kids confirmed. And this thing looks like a kid, so clearly all the evidence is stacked against you, Warheads.
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, Donnie can make a cure, but it might be that if he can make more of that cure, it might not work on her if she has a different type with being able to control it. They might have to come up with a new formula. Extra strength, mutagen cure. Yeah. You pick it up behind the counter at Walmart.
I'm curious if there's something just kind of different about her, similar to how there is with April. Because, Shredder. Shredder even mentioned that she was, like, special. But the way he was getting it seemed like it was more than just, oh, you're my daughter kind of thing. It was more of like a, oh, I kind of need you for something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, oh, no. I'm curious to see what it is.
It'll be interesting for sure. Lots of interesting stuff going on with that, and with her being a snake slithering around like a snake.
Oh, I get it. She's a snake.
Snake. Snake Hole Lounge. I'm Dan Snake Hole. My dad owns the place.
Jeez.
Sorry.
this actually has nothing to really do with anything. But when Raph got spit on by Karai, she spit in his face. And for whatever reason, I was just sitting there like, oh my god, I hope he loses an eye, because Raph with an eye patch would be awesome. I don't know why that occurred to me, but I'm kind of sad that it didn't happen.
I just like your initial thought, oh my god, I hope he loses an eye. First Slade, then Rachel, now Raph. All these people missing eyes, man. Bulk in that one episode, and then he like lifted it up and he saw an eye. Poor Mace Windu missing an eye in the Marvel movies. Trying to remember his name. Nick Fury. There we go. I had Mace Windu ready just in case.
Wow.
You know, Mace Fury. AKA Nick Windu.
Sounds like one of those Transformer names from the other day. Mace
Peace
Fury.
Peacebreaker. So perfect.
Okay, so on to Korra.
Yep. Oh, yeah, we're still in ramble time. I was like, are you going to do the ramble time introduction, you behemoth? I don't know why behemoth. I meant to say, like, barbarian, but then behemoth came out.
I mean, we just got done talking about turtles a second ago. I don't know why you would think that.
There was no intermission about pizza.
real quick, though, would our special guest like to talk about turtles?
Turtles.
Okay. The tiny jar man just said turtles.
So quiet.
You're the turtles guy. I would expect more.
Yeah. That was fun. What's your name? Karai the Mutant?
Her name is Mace Fury.
Except for the fact of Kiefer saying things on Twitter, I didn't expect that happening, but that was fun. It's interesting that she can change herself to look like her normal human self and also be a snake. So I guess we'll figure out or find out what happens there. But
on the next Dragon Ball Z.
I would really like to point out how I hate her character design.
I think I got that when you said she's ugly, and then she's got teeth, which makes her more ugly. And then her face, she's ugly. I think I caught it then. Like, I was a little suspicious, but, like, the third ugly got me. I think that Brian thought she was more beautiful when she turned into a snake.
Yeah.
She's the evolved form of, I almost said Cobra, Arbok.
Well, you're not wrong.
I know, but it's just funny, like, I messed up.
Yeah, I actually really like her snake design, though.
I liked getting that, like, history between Shredder and Splinter. And, like, actually just getting, like, yeah, no, we used to be pals, and then we met a girl, and then Shredder went, like, no, fuck you, I want it. Mine? And then he was like, no.
I want the origin of their names. Like, I like to think Shredder's real brutal because he shredded people. And, like, Splinter's was that he gave people a lot of Splinter.
Aww.
Like, he was just really annoying, and then Brian just collapsed.
My lightning energies went everywhere.
Lightning energy?
You're an idiot.
Oh, no.
No. Speaking of lightning energy, Korra? No, apparently not. Korra, the Explorer!
We have a lot to talk about this week.
It was an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It was Korra the movie. She wasn't even a blue giant. She's back and she's a blue giant. Yeah, so a lot's going on.
People who don't like her. Because
okay.
Like, can't get rid of these vines. You're a bitch.
I thought you meant like fans.
Same.
There's that too.
You gotta get rid of this originality. Just bring Aang back. Why was he a bad dad? I don't even know where to start. That was kind of, I mentioned on Twitter, that is kind of a good, like, you know, comparison. Like, the citizens are essentially like the fans that are mad at her for making a change. And so the vines are overflowing the Republic City, and obviously there's spirits living there, although we didn't see quite as many spirits as I thought. There was a couple in the beginning, and then that one guy that was, like, living in the vines.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing too many others. And she almost cured it with her spirit bending, but that didn't work out too well at all now, did it?
Yeah, no, it made it worse.
And, okay. Aerosol mentioned that he had a problem with the episodes, didn't you? And you're wondering if we would notice it. I'm wondering if it was the problem I had with them, and this might not even be related to yours, I thought it was trying, or it felt a little too much like it was trying to make changes to be like the original show a little. Like with Korra carrying an air thingy, she seemed a little toned down, and the whole, you know, adventure element. It felt, a lot of the tones felt a little bit like the original series, which I just hope they're not trying to change things to appease people, because I like the way they were doing things differently. I don't know if that was the same thing at all, but that was the thing. It wasn't necessarily I was angry, but it was a slight nitpick I had.
Not really. Mine's not like an anger thing either. It's unfortunate, I feel, I will agree that it does feel, I don't know how to put it, lighter, I guess.
Yeah.
similar, like you said, it's sort of similar in tone to the original series, which
it's all the airbending.
I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. It's an unfortunate thing if they're doing it solely to appease the fans, but
yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel like it's too bad because I didn't really have sort of issue there.
I just hope that it's not from here and then in book four that they decided to listen to fans and do things similar to the way they were doing it. Because I liked that Korra, while very much feeling like the same universe, also did things very differently. It wasn't structured the same. So I just hope that they aren't doing that because of fans and that was just part of their plan. What was your nitpick?
My nitpick was Boomy.
That he got bending?
Yeah.
Because you liked that he didn't have it?
It's unfortunate to me because
he was really annoying.
I did like that he was one of the few non-benders, because I felt that attributed a lot to his character, because some of my favorite scenes from the past season were the ones where it was just dealing with him and his siblings, and a lot of that sort of confrontation between them came from the fact that, at least on Boomy's side, that he wasn't a bender. He couldn't do what his brother and sister could. And my absolute favorite scene was just him in front of the statue of his dad saying how he was sorry that he couldn't be an airbender.
Yeah,
and
I really like that.
Still hope that he was proud of him.
Whoever's so honking, fix your shit.
So him suddenly getting airbending, while I understand that this was sort of a way to add in a little shocker towards the beginning of the season to make it be like, whoa, I didn't expect that. But I do feel like it does kind of take away a little bit from those scenes now, because I felt like such a strong feeling towards those scenes, and now if I go back, even though they are still there, the feeling has diminished because I know that, oh, well, it doesn't matter if he feels bad that he's not a bender, because he's going to be one pretty soon and everything's going to be okay. It just doesn't, I don't know.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
I don't think it bothers me quite as much, but I definitely see it. But, you know, at least still he did live a lot of his life as a non-bender and tried to. So at that point, it's not as if it was for nothing.
Yeah, it's, definitely.
It's not like he was like a teenager and just missed the cutoff or powers and all of a sudden got him. So he lived quite a while as a non-bender. I do like that there's other people getting bending. I like the whole storyline idea. Particularly, I like the element of that Tenzin is so excited at the idea of bringing back the air nomads, but everybody that's getting bending has a completely different culture and way of living. And I think that's so interesting because all the four nations since bending and their civilizations began have had these traditions, and sure, they've changed and modernized a little bit, but they still had them. But airbending has been extinct, that there's only that small, you know, family practicing it now. So there's probably going to be very few people that want to change their lifestyle, and they're going to have to essentially form a new way of handling the Air Nation, which I think will be really interesting.
I just think it's so funny. Like, he's so excited, and he's like, look, if you come with us and you learn how to be an airbender, you can do these cool things like shave your head, get tattoos everywhere.
Who doesn't want a best friend that's a bison?
Wear these robes. He is so excited about these things, and they're like, yeah, no, go away. I don't want anything to do with you. Slamming doors in his face. And Korra's like, no, I got this. Watch. We're just going to take him by force. Oh, okay. And they tried to recruit Dawson. I was like, that was a thing.
But yeah, I think that
I don't care about
it's going to be interesting.
I don't like people. Like, look at Dawson. That's awesome.
Apparently he was based on somebody, you, like a writer or something.
Who?
Or the guy, that one basement guy. They tried to recruit. He was based on somebody behind the scenes. So that's kind of neat.
But yeah, I like how all of this has sort of been handled with the, you know, the this new emergence of airbenders. And like you said, all of these people have such different cultures, and they already have like pre-established lives that it is a difficult thing to just all of a sudden be like, hey, now you're an air nomad. Now you have to do this. And I like that even though that those scenes were mostly comical, they came not too far after a pretty emotional little scene with Tenzin, who was tearing up at the fact that he finally was seeing, you know, the dawn of a new airbending culture. He, you know, he never expected this thing to ever exist, because for so long it was just, you know, for a while there it was just him and his dad, and then it was just him and his family. So it's actually really emotional to be able to see his culture being revived.
Yeah. And it's going to be an interesting journey having to see him accept that he's probably going to have to come up with a new way of things. Possibly like a blending of the way things were and the way things are now. It's going to, I think, kind of be sad for him, but they pretty much have to do that.
It's fun watching people like discover they can bend for the first time. They're just like, I can't control it. I'm sorry. I'm just blowing air everywhere.
And then, I hate to jump out of order, but the goddamn Dai Li, man. They're so corrupt.
Yeah.
In every series.
I watched this with my brother now. We caught up on, I caught him up on the full series a few months ago. So I was watching it with him. I'm like, when are the Dai Li not evil?
Because, yeah. You know, they're kidnapping the airbenders to create an army. Because we got that dumb bitch Earth Queen. It's just, it's kind of funny. That's another thing that brought me back to the similar tone of the Ba Sing Se, which is actually one of my favorite eras or stories or whatever in the original series. Just seeing, like, you know, the various adventures through town, and then, you know, the Earth Kingdom having all this shadiness going on.
Yeah.
With the leader and the Dai Li. So that very much so reminded me of that.
And now, unlike her. Was it her father or grandfather who was the king in the previous series? You know, he had no idea that any of it was going on, but she pretty much knows. Like, yeah. She knows. I got to the part where they were talking about going to see the Earth Queen. I'm like, I hope she has a bear. I hope she has something, because that was one of the funniest aspects of the Earth King, was just that he just has this bear, which is so weird in this world where all of the animals are like fusions of animals, to just have a normal bear. And then it's like, no, she hates animals. I'm like, that's so sad.
The bear. The series is trash. When Korra went to go see her, I thought it was an interesting... It wasn't really highlighted very much, but I thought it was an interesting little dialogue where she mentioned how when, you know, Aang and them, you know, took that land and made Republic City and they just kind of focused on it. I thought that was kind of interesting. Just it's showing that, you know, Aang's regime wasn't perfect everywhere.
Yeah.
And
Korra's response, like, I don't really know what I can do about that.
I wasn't there for that vote. That was a previous life.
I like that. That's something that actually happened in the comics. That was a plot point of the first comics that she was referencing, because they centered around Aang and Zuko trying to figure out a way to sort of establish these colonies in a different way that wouldn't be just Earth Kingdom or Fire Nation. So I like that they sort of, you know, that is canon. I like that they're sort of referencing that, because I can imagine that would tick off a lot of people. It's like, you took our land. That's
yeah,
not good.
I just like that they show that, like, it's not like I'm like, good, Aang failed, but I like showing that he did so much good, but he wasn't able to do this, like, everything is happy in the entire world. Like, he did the best that he could, but there were certain areas like that that got affected by decisions he made. The Dai Li continue to be dicks. They should have just abolished the Dai Li. Thanks, Aang.
How much fun was old Zuko, huh?
Hired someone like him to kill the Avatar once. Silence. Yeah. It didn't work.
I love that even though he is much older and it's obviously a different voice actor, they still keep that sort of personality of Zuko where he looks and sounds completely evil, but he's not. He's actually a really nice guy and kind of awkwardly funny. I love that they kept that. Even when he's an old man, he's just sort of like, yeah, I hired someone once to kill the Avatar. It didn't work, of course.
Hi, all. Zuko here. I love that part. You rehearsed that. But yeah, it was cool to see him again, and he has a dragon.
Yeah.
How did that happen? I thought they were dead. Did I forget something? Did he grow one?
I think it's really cool that he has a dragon, because I want a dragon.
Found the last dragon egg, Fireheart. That was still cool. And, you know,
destroyed awesome.
His storyline was separate from everyone else's, because he was going around to all those prisons, because that criminal who became an airbender now.
Yeah, Henry Rollins became an airbender.
Cash cab. For, you know, how quickly he got it, he airbends really well. It was really fun to watch him. It's kind of interesting seeing an aggressive airbender.
Yeah. You're not used to...
It's kind of like Korra. I like how, you know, because Aang was very calculating with his moves and very spiritual, and Korra's like punching people with air like, fuck this. And it's just interesting seeing to that degree, though, because he was a lot more... I guess skilled, like it was a lot more intricate in moves compared to Korra's. Because I feel like she uses airbending the least. But anyway, getting off point. But they went around to all those prisons that were like, all of them reminded me, especially the fire, or the, was it the earthbending one or the firebending? I think it was the earthbending one, where he got rocks. It reminded me of when Magneto escaped in X-Men 2, when he got the blood, the metal out of that guy's blood, and his prison was made out of the opposite element. And so those were all fun to watch, all those different expert benders, and we got another splody boom lady. So that'll be interesting.
I liked Bolin and Mako. Like, well, Mako's are just being a general, like, stupid-ass dick. Like, oh, I can't talk to you because I don't know how to handle myself. I'm a fucking retard because you're a girl. And
I didn't get that vibe from Mako at all.
Yeah, you know, I did. And then they, like, Bolin had to, like, convince him to come with them. And then they ended up being, like, this entire large family of people that I didn't even know about.
And then Mikey was their cousin, a.k.a. Kevin Levin. Yeah. All of a sudden he's like, hey, I'm like, I know you.
That was pretty funny.
It was more at the beginning, but I really got a kick out of that scene where Bolin was talking about how much he liked living with the airbending family, because he's like, you got the strict dad, the put upon mom, the crazy uncle, and it shows like them all with really funny faces. That was good.
I like that we got more of Mako and Bolin, because while I liked the second season, I do think that was something that was lacking, because I love Mako and Bolin together, and I like their whole backstory. I like that they're sort of fleshing this out and how we get to meet their dad's family, and how their dad's family apparently didn't even know that they were dead.
There's no telephone. Well, I guess there's telephones. What are they doing?
Well, they were in the really poor part of town.
They're in the Narrows. Yeah,
they were like in the India part of town.
But yeah, because they mentioned their backstory in season one, and they didn't touch upon it really at all last season. I really enjoyed Mako's storyline last year, though, with the investigation.
Yeah.
He kind of didn't get the credit he deserved at the end, but it was still a good story.
Like, they were practically in the Agrabah section, like, just come steal my fruit. Oh, okay, well, I'll take that gay man off your hands then, okay.
Just to talk a little bit more about the prisoners, the Earthbender, I love that he just spins the Earth so fast that he creates a molten shuriken.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That's awesome. I, like, halfway through the fight with the waterbender, I just turned my brother, I'm like, she's got no arms. Because I didn't see it, because when you just see her in the prison cell, I just thought she was bound. But no, she just got no arms.
Yeah, and I didn't notice that either at first, because I thought that she was just putting water over her arms. I didn't know she was making it her arms. That's badass.
That bitch got no arms. I cut them bitches off.
So I like that these four prisoners have these sort of almost unique ways of bending that we haven't seen with other people. Because, you know, you have the more brutal airbender. We haven't really seen an evil airbender. And then you have the shuriken guy and the no arms waterbender lady. And then, you know, explodey forehead girl. But
those are awesome names. Like, that should be her name. I'm explodey
forehead.
Whatever the fuck you said. Explodey forehead girl. I'm no arms girl.
They're a really neat group of benders, and all we really know about them is that they're evil, and airbendy guys wants to take down the Avatar. Who doesn't?
Right. Well, so, we know that they were all put in prison by the Avatar, I think. By the Avatar, and I'm assuming Zuko as well. I know a lot of people were sort of expecting Azula to be the firebender. I knew from the previews that it wasn't, but yeah, I think a lot of people were disappointed that it wasn't her.
I wonder if she's even alive.
I don't know.
That bitch be cray cray. She turned into a robot and then tried to take over the world, but then she was stopped. They totally missed that storyline because they canceled the spinoff of Avatar, Green Lantern.
Yeah, that bitch became a robot. She went nuts.
Let's see. What else is there to go over? I guess a new kid, Indian Aang.
Kai.
Yeah. I'm not really a fan of his right now. I like that Bolin likes him so much and is really trusting.
Bolin is really hard up on that little brother thing.
He's clearly screwed him over, but he's still worried about them. Or him.
I love this, like, obsession Bolin has with being a big brother, because he's never had that in his life.
But yeah, I like that bit, but I'm just not too big a fan of the kid so far. He's their only recruit outside of Bumi that wants to actually be an airbender.
Yeah.
I feel like there was something else.
I enjoyed their little animation when they were going from city to city, and they had, like, those big old goofy faces, and they're all smiling like, yeah, we're on this, we're going to go get us some airbenders, and by the end they're all just like crying because no one wants to be friends with them.
I wonder why Korra's all of a sudden carrying one of those air stick things.
Sticks? I
guess to get around
about that. I mean, they're cool and everything, but it seemed kind of funny because she didn't have one 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
because there's a pretty short gap between series compared.
Yeah, it's only 2 weeks.
Yeah. I don't know. That's why I thought it was one of those things. I hope they're not trying to make her too, like, say, oh, let's give her a stick. People think she's Aang. Like, well, that's not how it works.
Hey, wait, Aang was shorter and didn't have boobs. Shh, no one will notice.
For whatever
she
reason,
she has hair.
The stick thing just didn't dawn on me originally until you brought it up. Now looking back, it's like, yeah, that is kind of weird. Why does she have one of the... Why does she have Aang's thing?
Yeah, because, I mean, you can transport with it and she can airbend, but it made more sense for Aang because it was part of his culture. She's just like, oh, hey, what's this?
I could understand it if we had, like, a scene or something where Tenzin gave it to her because it was Aang's or similar to Aang's.
Yeah, well, maybe, like, okay, well, now you've mastered airbending, so you can carry this around.
you know, I did make the mistake of reading the comment section on one of the reviews I read, and there's obviously a lot of annoying anger, but there was somebody, it wasn't an angry comment, but someone brought up something really interesting that I never thought about, that Korra and Aang are perfect for each other's situations. because all of Korra's decisions have had a lot of really spiritual and like political and like things that need to be thought out that require a lot of decision making, and Aang was really good at sort of thinking that out and is real spiritual. And the Fire Lord needed to be killed, and Aang really struggled with wanting or having to kill him, and obviously he didn't, and energy bending happened. But Korra, I'm sure, would have taken no prisoners, and she probably would have had a lot different attitude. And I think that's kind of interesting.
Korra would have marched in his door and just whipped his ass and then been done with it.
She would have Avatar stated all over him and then had Avatar stating games with the airbending kids.
I do think that's really cool, though. I didn't even think about that. Because, you know, with Aang's situation, it was wartime. There was, you know, unrest everywhere. And Aang really wasn't suited for that kind of lifestyle, which they showed throughout the course of the series. So, yeah, a more aggressive Avatar, someone who could not really feel too many qualms about getting the job done, would have been perfect there. But in Korra's situation, it is a more peaceful era. Yeah. There isn't a war, like there isn't just like this big world war going on. So you kind of need someone who is more calm-minded and able to, you know, deal with all of these different parties peacefully, and Korra is just not that way.
No. Well, the only thing about all that is that's the only way, with them being not suited for the task that they have to perform as an Avatar, is what allows them to grow as a character and to change and to kind of learn different things and different ways of thinking. Because if someone like Korra with the Avatar during Aang's time, it would have, we'd have just had like one static character for three seasons.
Yeah,
kind of, yeah, it definitely makes it more interesting.
So it's a lot more fun having them.
I didn't want them to switch places. I never thought about that.
It is kind of funny when you actually look at it, like you take a step back and look at it and say, wait a minute, you belong here, you belong here. There we go. Everybody's like, happy.
I hate that people are so harsh on Korra for not being the way Aang was. Because I like that they made him so different. They kind of had to. And honestly, I really like Aang, but I honestly kind of like Korra's personality better just because I like that type of character more. And neither of them is perfect. And I don't like that she gets so much shit for not being Aang. And I also saw a lot of people complaining about, they said that they felt Korra was unfocused because every season has a different storyline as opposed to having one long-running narrative. And I like that it's different. I like that we don't have one long storyline, that every series has its own storyline. And in a sense, 2 has led into 3. You know, the whole repercussions from the spirit realm is leading into it. But I like that it's different. And it keeps things a little easier to watch in a sense, too, because I watched Avatar in a binge-watch situation with Brian, who's mysteriously disappeared. I can't imagine. That was quite a long time for one storyline, you know, week to week. But with this one, at least when you get done with the book, you have at least some sense of closure.
Yeah.
So basically, it's running like a normal show.
Yeah.
You know, you have season-long plots. But yeah, I like it. I like that they tried to do something different this time around, which, I mean, they were kind of forced to do something different just given their situation where they didn't really expect to get more seasons and they only really planned one. So, but yeah, I like what it became.
Because it allows you to explore all kinds of different aspects, too. Because with the first series, you just, you know, the one era, the one challenge. With this one, you know, there's a lot more interesting things going on with, like, the motivations. Like, you know, you had the sort of Amon stuff, where it was like benders versus non-benders, and then last season it was had a lot to do with the origins of the Avatar, and then this season is how the world changed. I just think it's interesting to actually get to explore different aspects of the world, because it's such a giant world that I
want
to
see. And it's not only that too, it's also there's the in here in Korra you have the repercussions of what happened with Aang and what he did after the war was over and kind of how he shaped the world in his time as Avatar, on top of here's all this new technology that's been developed in those, you know, what was it, like 70 years, whatever, I forgot the exact time difference, 80 years since he defeated the Fire Lord, and all the changes to the world and how the Avatar's kind of new place in it is.
Yeah, I love the idea of Avatar having approval ratings. I don't know why, that just cracks me up. Like, it's the president. Like, your numbers are in, your approval ratings are down.
Like, your numbers are in, people hate you. Because it's been 2 weeks and these lions are still fucking here. So, you need to get on that. Like, right now.
Speaking of the president, he became a dick.
Yeah. God. I'm sorry I fakely voted for him. but... That was...
I know, I ran his campaign, I'm very ashamed.
He ran him out of town. There's, I mean, she just saved him from a gigantic evil guy. How quickly
like,
they
need
forget.
To leave. She's like, I was leaving. Flips him off.
I was leaving. Tenzin, we gotta go. Pretend we were leaving the whole time. Yep, no. Now we got a week before another new episode, right?
Yeah,
because
holy shit, it's Brian.
I've just been listening. It's not on next week, and then every week we have an hour.
Oh!
Oh wow!
So, as of what Nickelodeon said, they're it's gonna end about August 2nd or so.
Oh.
And then it's not gonna be on again until book 4.
Damn.
That is...
Tense.
I don't know if that's unfortunate or nice or what, because it is kind of unfortunate that they're kind of burning through it so fast, but...
Yeah, I like having an hour to watch, but, man, yeah. I like it to last longer at the same time.
You know, so something that said that they premiered to lower ratings, well, you know, maybe
but it went
if,
up against something.
Yeah, well, and also maybe if you wouldn't have just announced like a week before it aired, like, oh, hey, by the way, this show's going to be on in like 5 days. Like, oh, shit.
And, you know, it's not that I don't want the show to do good, but I really don't care because we've already been, they already confirmed them for books 3 and 4. So it's not like it's maybe, they already confirmed it. So, it's, you know, and that's what they planned. So I'm fine with that, you know. So it's not like we're in danger of cancellation for next season. But it is kind of it's kind of unfortunate though that seemingly since I don't know I thought the first season did really good at the very beginning, but since season 2 at least it hasn't been getting as good ratings, which seems crazy just because of how popular Avatar was, and people still talk about it a ton and they re-air it like all the time on Nicktoons, so it just seems weird that it's not as huge of a deal, at least seemingly.
It's because Korra sucks.
Yeah.
I know this time around, I don't know how valid this is, but I know that because of the leaked episodes, they pretty much pushed up the scheduling, which is why we didn't have as much you know, marketing for it. But I don't know.
I don't know how little marketing there was. The only time I watched Nickelodeon between announcement and... premiere was the One Turtles episode, and I mean there was an ad for it like every commercial break.
Yeah, I saw at least
during
three
that
ads.
Turtles episodes. I mean, I don't know what it was like during the week because I don't watch Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon to know about like these advertising schemes.
It's all
or anything like that. So I mean, I can't really say for sure, but the 1 half-hour program that I watched during the run of Nickelodeon, which was Turtles, I saw it several times. So I mean, I don't know. I know like the kid audience probably wouldn't see it via online, But, I mean, if they played the ad as much as they played it during the Turtles episode I watched, I don't think it was really a problem. But everyone makes it out to be, so...
I do think it's funny how, regardless of whether... regardless of how they would have managed this, people would have complained. Because if they would have taken their time and, you know, marketed over a much longer period, people would have been like, why aren't they airing it now? Like, I mean, I sent you guys that petition where people were like, they should be airing it now. They should be respecting the show and, you know, giving it a better schedule. And then, you know, but then you have now where it's like, oh, by the way, we're giving it to you next week. And people get mad. I'm just like, are you insane? You should be happy. It's coming next week. This is exciting.
That's exactly what fandoms do.
It's like Nickelodeon invited all of them to a surprise birthday party and they just got angry.
Fuck your cake and your joy.
Fuck your joy.
That's usually how I handle surprise parties.
I didn't know about the 2-episode thing, but damn. I wish there were a little bit longer seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it was anything, like, announced, but it was one of the Quora fan site Twitters that I follow asked Nickelodeon what the schedule was, and because we know that there's an hour, not next week, but the week after. And I think they looked at a listing and it said that there was 2 episodes a week after that. And so I asked Nickelodeon, and apparently Nickelodeon tweeted that the current schedule has an hour of Korra every week, 2 new episodes, not just like an hour block. But so it's weird. I don't know what their plan is, but... It's fortunate and unfortunate at the same time, just like you said.
Uh-huh.
We'll see what happens. Okay, so... Falling Skies next?
Those skies fell.
Okay. That sums up the episode.
Yep, alright, next. No, I really enjoyed this episode. Quite a bit actually happened. Tom's whole ghost persona's gone now. Yeah. Which... was surprisingly fast. I kind of expected at least one more episode, but that happened quickly because they were threatening him, and Pope was only really stashing like 4 beans or something like that. But Tom got to go up to the Isfani ship, and I think probably one of the biggest like reveals was that they claim that their reason they've invaded Earth and other planets is to prepare for an even greater threat. So that's
part of all these greater threats. All these people keep coming in and they're like, oh, we're a bigger threat than the people you're dealing with now, or we need to prepare for a bigger threat, and it's always a fucking bigger threat.
Right.
Can't they just deal with the shit they got now?
Well, we don't even know if it's true, but I think it's definitely interesting. For a second I thought he was talking about the Vault.
Mm-hmm.
But it's obviously, if it's true, it's a third party. And these Fenny obviously have a really interesting way of going about getting allies. If
you
it's true.
You will work for us because we said so.
But, it's interesting to be sure. I'm curious to see how it develops, like how true it is or what, because these Fenny haven't really been very friendly. But they're trying different tactics to be sure. They talked about how they're going to like recruit certain intelligent people and the rest they're going to brainwash. And they're in the process of brainwashing the kids right now. And over at Matt's camp, his friend got sent away because he upsetted Tony Perkis. So he got sent out. He's going to come back and he's like, oh, it was great. I had all you can eat at the Sizzler. I'm just remembering that movie now. I'm feeling skinniest, Fanny.
He's going to be, like, all alone.
Ooh, Matt?
He's going to pick off all of his little class people. And then...
poor Matt. And that stupid, team leader guy? Guy's such a douche.
Looks like a boy band member.
He does. He's evil Justin Bieber.
So real Justin Bieber.
Exactly. let's see. And then we got Ben over at Lexi's camp. And, sorry, we kind of find out that Lexi isn't necessarily the one instituting these weird rules. It was actually Lourdes controlling her.
Not surprised.
Lourdes be cray cray. What happened to Lourdes? She used to just be this quiet medical assistant. And then last season, she's infected and shooting presidents, and now she's a cult leader. Like, I was a little bit surprised that they went that direction again. Like, I knew that she was drinking the Kool-Aid last week, but I didn't know she was so manipulative about it and, like, refusing to let the doctor see her and take a blood sample. Tingle, tingle. but I enjoyed the scenes with Ben and Lexi and, like, showcasing their bond. So I thought that was nice and nice.
I like scenes with Lexi.
Yeah, so do I, now that I know it's okay. And she's also communicating with the Nishveni, so that's interesting. And I always forget about Anne's camp, but they caught a skitter and
killed it.
Yeah, well, she found out that they are sort of like they know about the hybrid and it's sort of like important to them. So I don't know, it's interesting. Everything that's going on. I think there's some really cool stuff going on. Mm. And I enjoyed the episode.
I just watched it not too long ago, actually.
Probably watched everything 5 minutes ago.
Kind of. it was a crazy day. But, yeah, no, it was less things happened and more, it was kind of like the Toku parts we get to where it's like, oh, it was a setup episode. A lot happened, but it was all for an eventual greater build up, really.
Kind of like every episode.
Yeah, basically. But no, I did enjoy it. I don't have a whole lot to add to that, or a whole lot to really even say. But it was an enjoyable episode.
Yeah, I'm still enjoying the season.
Oh yeah, so I mean we're only two
episodes in.
Two.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the last one was, like, longer, wasn't it?
By, like, 2 minutes, I think.
Okay.
It wasn't 2 hours.
I don't fucking know anymore.
I think last season was 2 hour premiere, so.
But, yeah, it's still really early. I forgot, how long are seasons for this show?
I think they're usually 13, but I think it got up to, like, 16 this year.
Oh, sweet.
Because I remember reading last year when it got renewed that they got a few more episodes, so this one's a little bit longer, which is nice.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah. I still love me some Falling Skies. Love me some Lexi. But, yeah, there's that. Speaking of Lexi, Transformers, she wasn't in it. I think she was in Harry Potter.
Yeah, she was in Harry Potter.
I keep forgetting, but the main bitch in this movie was from the Avatar movie.
Yeah, that's kind of why I went in expecting to hate her.
I forgot about it until... Well, later. Like you told me about it like 3 times, and I keep forgetting it. I'm like an Alzheimer's patient.
There.
But yeah, Transformers 4. Brian did a large ramble about it.
Large is an understatement. Yeah. It's about as large as my belly.
It's
pretty big.
It's fitting though because of how long the movie was.
It was. I'm sitting here going the. Biggest flaw in this movie is the fact that, like this ramble, it was just too long.
It was too long. There was a lot of scenes that could have been cut out. Dark of the Moon was pretty long, too. But I actually didn't notice how long it was till I saw it the second time. Because I saw it at midnight, and it was still a long movie, but, you know, when you're into it, you don't really notice it as much. And then I went to go see it again with a friend, like, maybe a few weeks, a month later. And I still enjoyed watching it, but I definitely felt the length when you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, Dark of the Moon clipped a little faster. Like, this movie had scenes like the whole Asian woman chase scene that didn't need to be there. Like, it was extremely long, like, her protecting that guy. I can't remember his name. Fuck. Dude, the scientist guy that made the Decepticons. Well, thought he did.
Joyce.
His name's Joyce?
Joshua Joyce.
Okay. Joyce? Okay, but yeah, that scene ran a little long. There was just kind of a bunch of random fluff scenes, but for the most part, I enjoyed it. I actually think my biggest problem was how shoehorned the Dinobots were.
Yeah. Like, I saw your tweet before I went and seen it, and I was like, oh, I hope this is one of those instances where I really disagree with him. But it absolutely was. Like, they pumped up this movie so much to be all Dinobots everywhere, and all the toys are like 5 billion versions of the Dinobots, which I love. They're great toys.
Settle down.
It just went down to the fact that the Dinobots were basically just tools,
yeah,
that were used in at the end fight scene, and there wasn't anything else to it. And while I'm not expecting them to be in-depth characters or anything, I was expecting them to at least be tools that were around longer.
Yeah, like have a presence in the movie.
And there was zero explanation really for why they existed. It was implied that they were knights, like apparently
yeah,
Optimus
mixed.
Is a knight too.
Yeah, like yes. I felt like the whole Knights of the Round Table or whatever got mixed with the Dinobots, and I don't know whether they're supposed to be the same or not, but they definitely got jumbled up together. And you know, the only pre-establishment they had was that they were, you know, on his ship as trophies because they took a portion of Lockdown's ship.
Yeah.
So at least that was established. So at least they didn't just pop up out of the ground or something, you know. So at least they had some form of context.
I like how I spent a small portion of my ramble talking about how Lockdown had a really stupid ship. You put your trophy room on a ship that will detach from your big ship. What is wrong with you? anyway.
I definitely hope that in the next movie they have the Dinobots in a little more. Like you said, I don't expect them to be amazing characters, but at least make it worth the fact that they introduced them.
Right.
But it was pretty cool. I mean, it's still like superficially awesome to see Optimus riding Grimlock. Mm-hmm. But holy crap. Optimus threatened to kill Grimlock if he didn't help. He's like, if you don't help the family, I'll kill you. I'm like, what are you, fucking mob boss, Optimus? Optimus is fucking hardcore.
There's so much shit surrounding like this franchise and the way that Optimus is perceived. I love it.
I love Movie
like,
Prime a lot.
Movie Prime is such like
a badass.
Like, I don't even want to use the term badass because I was getting really angry at people throwing around the term the other day.
Well, I think gummy bears are badass. How do you feel about that?
But it's just one of those things where he's perceived so differently than what people are used to Prime being. And that's what I love so much. And when you look at his character from a more psychological standpoint, given the history of everything that's occurred within these movies and then Cybertron itself in this timeline, it makes sense. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you got really pissed at Megatron and Sentinel Prime in Dark of the Moon for essentially wiping out most of the race of Transformers.
And then attempted to do it to humans now.
And then come... So you work your ass off to protect the humans so that it doesn't happen to them. And then the humans turn around and start killing your friends and then try to kill you. He's already kind of messed up a little bit, given
yeah.
what's happened. The humans trying to kill the Autobots was like that kind of death blow.
Yeah.
To his mind, the fact that he just don't give a damn anymore. He wants... to kill people. Like, don't
yeah.
kill my friends, jackass. And it's understandable. I mean...
Like, yeah, I completely agree that I think all of his actions make sense. And, you know, at his core, he still feels like Optimus. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's still got that same base setup, but he reacts to things differently, which I always mention, I like to see different versions in different types of media. I don't want to see the same Optimus in every series and movie.
Yeah.
And, you know... He was more brutal in the previous movies with, you know, killing the robots, but that's one thing I actually like about the movies is that the stakes feel real and that robots can die, whether it's Decepticon or Autobot.
Right.
I think they throw away people a little too easily because you can save them for another movie because they're kind of an important character, but I like that the stakes are there. and it's necessary. And in this one, it was even more understandable and very interesting, actually, to see Optimus, because he had been hunted. Like, his first line was, "I'll kill you."
Mm-hmm.
But he's been hunted, so it makes complete sense. And he's kind of going through, you know, postpartum depression, and it's just really interesting. And I love the way it was played. Like, he clearly was fed up with all this and was pissed that the humans were attacking him, but you could still see that he cared.
Yeah.
So I thought that was played really well. The Grimlock thing was kind of disturbing when he threatened to kill him. If you don't protect the family, you don't ever take sides against the family again. But
it was very extreme. Again, I think it was one of those things where they were his last ditch effort.
Yeah.
And so he was kind of willing to pull out all the stops.
And something I'm surprised I don't see anybody talking about, he killed a guy, like a guy in this movie. He shot Kelsey Grammer. Everyone's like, "Oh, he threatened Grimlock." I'm like, he shot a dude. Why isn't anyone talking about this? He completely deserved it.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, he was about, I mean, I'm surprised I don't see people talking about it, but it was also, it made sense. I mean, he was about to kill Cade. It's like, bitch, you don't kill Mark Wahlberg. Boom. But I was surprised because I was thinking people were going to freak out because they freaked out when he killed Megatron. And killed Sentinel and the Fallen.
He can kill this people. It's just when he goes when he kills other Transformers.
Yeah, that's when you draw the line.
That's when you draw the line.
Like, but yeah, kill that other was people. Crazy. But yeah, I really like Movie Prime a lot, and I agree with what you said about how they gave all the Autobots in this one character, which was really nice. I think they did a pretty solid job of that in the first movie. All of them felt distinct.
Yeah, they definitely felt distinct in the first movie.
It was after that they kind of had throwaway characters.
Yeah, because I mean, when you look at the first movie, you only had Ironhide, Ratchet, Prime, and Bumblebee. That was it, right?
Jazz, that.
Jazz. Oh, yeah, I fucking forgot the black guy.
I still remember. I still remember his personality though. So.
Yeah, and they all were distinctly different from each other. It was when you get into Revenge of the Fallen that you have, I think, all three motorcycle triplets.
Yeah, they were forgettable.
That I don't even know if they spoke.
Someone said, like, "Sam, get away," or something, and she got shot.
Oh, okay. I remember one of them getting shot. That was the extent of my remembrance of them. Well,
and then Jolt was in the movie for, like, two frames.
Yeah, Jolt was in there. Skids and Mudflap were in there, but they were... more highlighted characters, so they were more memorable. But Jolt was there. He wasn't of any sort of importance. There's...
Sideswipe wasn't very fleshed out, like, character-wise, but I remember him just because he essentially took Jazz's place.
Yeah.
And he was present a lot. He only had that whole, like, "damn, I'm good" line or something. But he didn't really have much of a personality, but I at least remember him because he was around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to everyone else. But that was one thing, is because I actually really like these movies, but that was one complaint I had, is that they had so many throwaway characters and then they, like, disappear. Like, you know, Jolt, I don't think he was in Dark of the Moon, and then Skids and Mudflap obviously removed because of their controversy or whatever. I personally really like them. I love the shit out of those two, but that bothers me that they just randomly disappear like that. And this one is kind of assumed most of them are killed now. But in the previous movies,
Skids and Mudflap were supposedly killed in Dark of the Moon, but it was only, like, in the novels, I think, because they ended up removing it or something. I don't know.
I liked them. But what was I going to say? That is one thing, is I like the new ones, but it kind of bugs me that you never seen them before. I mean, there was 4 years, but it just seems weird that new ones would arrive with all this turmoil going on. So I kind of wish that they maybe had one other older one in the group or something, or one that had been pre-established. Just because, with the exception of Bumblebee, it's all new. And it just seems kind of weird. Mm-hmm. That, you know, he's getting the last ones that have survived, and then, like, 70% of them are unknowns. But I liked them all. They all had distinct personalities. I really like Crosshairs a lot, because I didn't know he was Wrath, but I liked him. I agree with you, said I didn't like Drift as much as I thought I would. I think my favorite part with him was when he's like, "We're going to handle this peacefully," and then something jumped out of him and he just stabs it. I thought that was funny. But they did a lot better job in this one of making them all feel like they had distinct personalities, and they didn't kill any of them off. So I hope that they keep that core group for the following movies. And if they introduce more people, at least make them important or memorable, at least.
Honestly, as long as Hound is still in the movies, I'm okay.
With his hat.
Hound, I love Hound so much. And you might as well call him Bulkhead, honestly.
He was, basically.
Because Hound hasn't had a whole lot, at least in animation, a lot of rememberable sort of personality traits.
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell you whether the, like, gun-toting sort of atmosphere is related to Hound whatsoever. But in size and structure, he was definitely Bulkhead.
Yeah.
But I can kind of see him not wanting to use Bulkhead, given how in both animated and
Prime
he was very kind of a kid-friendly character, I guess you could say. It doesn't really apply to Bumblebee, but...
I also agree with what you said about, I like how Bee was used. Like, you know, he was still present and he had memorable little moments, but he wasn't overly focused on, since he was sort of one of the focuses of the last trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do wish we would have found out what happened to the human characters, because obviously we know behind the scenes they did a refresh. But in world, it doesn't make any sense to me. I can kind of see them, you know, saying, they could have just said, like, Bumblebee staying away from Sam and, what's new Michaela's name? Carly. Because, you know, to protect them from being attacked. But the military guys is what doesn't make sense to me, because they stood by them so often. Like, in Revenge of the Fallen, when that nerd guy was trying to get rid of them, they stood by the Transformers. So it just doesn't make sense that you wouldn't see, like, Lennox or Epps helping.
Yeah, I'm going to assume the government had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, it just seems strange.
But it was just one of those things where I would have liked to have some throwaway lines to fill in a couple gaps, like have Optimus mention Sam to Bumblebee or mention the military to someone, Cade maybe, I don't know. But yeah, it's something where I'm okay with it not being there, but I really would have liked to see it.
Yeah. Just because it's just kind of crazy, this weird gap. Because 4 years isn't that long. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of nice to know. But speaking of the human characters, I did like the new ones. I liked Mark Wahlberg's Cade a lot.
I really enjoyed it. Like, his story ended in a way where if they continued to use him throughout the upcoming trilogy, I'd be perfectly okay with it, and if they didn't, I'm still satisfied with the journey he had through the one movie. But I really do want to see him again. Like, I like Mark Wahlberg in general, honestly.
I think it would be weird if he wasn't, just because they kind of rebooted it with him. So, and I can see him being in there pretty easily, because it seemed to me at the end he got a job with Joyce.
Yeah,
so
it's pretty much implied that if that doesn't actually happen, I'd be really surprised.
I'd be okay with them maybe getting a couple other secondary leads. Like, I didn't hate the daughter or the boyfriend, but they were fairly forgettable.
I really think that there would be a chance to where she could easily become the next Sam, in which case she served her purpose in this movie, but kind of overstayed the welcome in the other movies.
I don't agree with that so much, though. Because he was... I mean, in the second movie, he absorbed the Intersect or whatever.
Yeah.
So he needed to be there. And in the third one, it was very clear that he was sidelined and he wasn't needed anymore, but he really wanted to be a part of it because he wanted to be important. And I honestly really liked Sam.
I don't.
Well, because Shia LaBeouf is kind of a crazy fuck. I don't know what's going on with that dude, but I enjoy his acting. I find him
fighting
funny.
Homeless people or something.
He fought a homeless guy. He's like, you got my hat. I'm like, dude, what's going on? What's going on, Lewis? What happened to you? Where's Ren? But outside of his personal life, I enjoy his acting. I think he's funny. I've liked him since Even Stevens. I always find him entertaining, and I thought he was entertaining in the last movies. And it was really funny because when you were talking about what did Sam do other than run and scream, I was thinking about Mudflap and Skids had like the same argument where he's like, what the hell has Sam ever done? He's like, killed Megatron. Which is true. He did kill him. He did a lot of that, you know, stereotypical, you know, screaming, B, no, Optimus. But he did kill Starscream too. So
he did.
He did a lot of stuff. But I enjoyed him, and I like that this movie...
At least Starscream stayed dead.
Yeah, until the next movie, when he's Galvascream. I don't know. I like that the humans' energy and everything was different this time, you know? Because it was a little more comedic last time, some more different energy in general, and I really liked Sam and the old characters, but I like that this one was different. I like that instead of focusing on a romantic relationship, it was a father-daughter thing, just to make that different. Like I said, the other two were kind of bland. There was a couple funny parts with... I can't remember his name, so I'm just going to call him Lucky Charms, too.
Shane.
Yeah, like with him surrendering and bragging about his car skills. I did not expect J.P. Miller to get killed so quickly. He was the guy that humped the Christmas tree on Attack of the Show. So that's what happens. But yeah, I enjoyed the different energy. I think that I'd love to see Mark Wahlberg back. I'm not opposed to seeing the other two, or at least her, because it's his daughter, like, is possibly reoccurring.
Mm-hmm.
But just maybe not in the main, because she didn't really stand out as much. I thought even for how quickly the turnaround in the last movie was, I thought Carly did a good job of standing out amongst everybody.
Carly was definitely more pleasant to look at.
What else? Oh, one of my favorite parts in the whole movie... I laughed really hard was when Joyce was behind those two Chinese ladies and he's like, how the fuck do you say get the fuck out of the way in Chinese?
That was really funny.
It was really good. He was funny near the end.
His character had a really quick turnaround that was a little bit off-putting.
Yeah.
But I really did enjoy most of his scenes toward the end of the movie.
Yeah. So I wouldn't mind seeing him reoccurring either. He's kind of like the new Simmons. Or whatever. The guy in Sector 7. He was funny, too.
I'm obligatory mention that Erica Fong was in the movie for five
Oh,
seconds.
Yeah! Good thing she didn't cook for anyone. I forgot. I meant to tweet about that right when I saw it. I'm like, boy, is that Mia?
I seen her. I was like, dat Mia. And then I looked at the credits and I found her name in the credits. I was like, I was right. And I felt very satisfied with myself.
And in the song that played in the credits was Everyday Fun or whatever that song is from Samurai. I'm trying to think. There's something else I was going to mention. Was there? I'm trying to think of any humans or anything. Kelsey Grammer was a good villain.
Oh, he was.
Is it just me or does his voice sound really close to Peter Collins? Sometimes it sounded like Optimus's voice.
Kind of.
It could just be me.
I'd have to listen to it again, but they have the same sort of tone to it.
But I liked having a sort of human villain to it. I haven't mentioned yet, but I really liked Lockdown. He was a really cool
Lockdown
presence.
Lockdown was great. I'm partly upset that they ended up killing him off, but at time, it felt like the right time.
Yeah. And I like the way the movie had like the central story, but then also essentially, you know, did a good job of setting things up for later. Like Galvatron, I thought it was pretty well done. He was there enough to make a presence and give them auto or Decepticons or drones or whatever to fight. They weren't really Decepticons, but they did a good job of reintroducing him and sort of giving him an origin. So that way in the next movie, we can just say, they're here, and we don't have to focus any time on that.
Right.
And then also setting up for the creators as well. And it didn't really feel like it was crowded or anything. It was just sort of good background stuff going on so that you have set up. And I thought that was pretty well done.
But I mean, there's so many people that don't like it. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I'm not going to say, oh my god, you're so wrong. Because it all, at the end of the day, kind of boils down to what your expectations were and what you consider a good movie. I understand differences in opinions and stuff. But I think if you were a fan of the other movies, and then you think that this one was bad, I get confused a little bit. if you never liked any of the movies, then absolutely I could see why you wouldn't really like this one, because I don't feel like there's a whole lot outside of a tone down on like the potty humor different between the movies to make you feel different if you didn't like the first three. But I feel like if you enjoyed the first three and don't like this one, I'd kind of curious as to why.
Yeah.
Because I felt that this was probably one of the stronger of the three. Like I said in my ramble, I don't know if I would consider it better than the first one, just given how powerful the first one was. But I would at least put it on par with three, and I really liked three, so.
Yeah, I always go back and forth, three or one is my favorite, but, you know, everyone's got different tastes, but there is that, it's just a term I think Keith Justice uses a lot, which I actually like, which is hate culture, where it's like people just decide to hate something, like, anytime Michael Bay's involved. Mm-hmm. And that just annoys me. Like, they hate it before they see it, and they just instantly have this hate towards it. And honestly, they're not among the best movies I've ever seen, but I really like them a lot. They're a lot of fun. And they're exactly sort of what I expected, and I like a lot of what they do. And, you know, Transformers at its core is a kind of a stupid premise when you really think about it. It's a silly premise.
Yeah.
And the storylines that happen in the shows are kind of silly. And there's no difference between the shows and the movies when it comes to that, if you really think about it. And there's a lot, there's a little bit more human focus in them, but I don't mind that. I like having human characters. But I just don't get why people get so mad at it. It's not that bad. Like people, I mean, I've seen bad superhero Tyson, but like, it's not that bad that people make it out to be. It's the same thing with Turtles. It's like Turtles is an even dumber premise when you get down to it. And it's not something that can exactly be that ruined. Yeah, I enjoy them, obviously. Oh, well.
We'll see. At the end of the day, I went in wanting to see a moderately enjoyable movie about robots fighting other robots.
With Mark Wahlberg.
And that's exactly what I got. And so I was satisfied, and I had a few complaints. I addressed said complaints in both this talk and the ramble, and they're not major enough for me to say that the movie sucked. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really liked it a lot. I think people, and there's people that have some legitimate complaints, but I think there's a lot of just people that are determined to hate it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, even if you just ignore the quality of the movie or anything you like about it, it's done a lot for the franchise.
Oh yeah, I'm very, very much curious on where Transformers would be without the movie franchise. Because I question whether we would have gotten things like Prime.
Yeah, or animated.
Yeah, because animated came out in 2008, right?
Yeah, I think it was after the first movie.
Right after the Tales of the first movie?
I think so, yeah.
So I don't know a lot about how animated would stand. Given how I feel like animated was probably in the planning stages alongside the movie. But things like Prime and stuff, I don't think we would have really gotten without the films. And even as far as most of the toy lines, I mean, they have sales figures that prove that the movie toy lines sell better than the TV show or like Generations and stuff. So yeah. I think at a financial level, the franchise needed something like the movies.
Yeah, because it really brought it back to the forefront. I mean, the first movie got me back into it. Because, you know, I was into it more so with Beast Wars when I was younger, and then I kind of fell out of it. I lost some of my figures, some of them got sold. It wasn't one of my most major things, but when the first movie came out and I saw it, that's when I got back into it. So it's kind of proof. But so even if you don't like the movies, you have to admit, you know, it's done good.
Yeah.
Because it's given us a lot toy and show-wise and all that stuff.
But, a lot of the toys are really good.
Yeah. I like a lot of my old movie toys, and some of the new ones are pretty awesome also. And bottom line is toys and Transformers. And I'm sad that Sam's parents didn't drive through a scene randomly. What happened to Sam's parents? That's really what everyone wants to know. What happened to Mojo? For God's sake. Mojo. I completely forgot to mention that I forgot the brains was in it.
Yeah.
Poor Wheelie's probably dead. He humped the wrong leg.
I like the one Ask FM question I got. Like, is Wheelie's fate addressed? I said, no. I just like to imagine he's driving around looking for good legs to hump.
You know, the one other thing I was going to mention, it's kind of a sad last thing to mention, but I thought Ratchet's death was really sad.
It was. Ironhide's death in Dark of the Moon.
Oh, Ironhide's death was brutal.
Really, really hit for me because I really liked Ironhide in the movies.
And it was such a sudden thing, too.
It was. There was no real build-up to it because Sentinel just decided to pull a Michi, except with a giant gun. And that's a lot more deadly than a foot. And so, I mean, I'm sitting here watching Dark of the Moon for the first time, and then Sentinel just ends up just shooting Ironhide in the face. And it's like, I'm a bitch. And that death was really kind of unfortunate for me, because I liked Ironhide so much. To the point that I bought his little deluxe figure, which is actually a really good figure for Dark of the Moon's line. But anyhow, And the Ratchet kind of had the same thing going for it, because I did like Ratchet, and you spent so much time with Ratchet throughout the three movies that to watch him kind of more or less just get manhandled by
Manful
and Lockdown was like, oh, no, Ratchet, don't kill Ratchet. And then they like dragged Ratchet away. I'm like, oh, no, Ratchet. But they stole. People are saying that Lockdown ripped out his spark container, and so people are going like, well, maybe they showed him ripping out the spark container so that they could have an out to bring Ratchet back because the spark's still there. Like, I don't know
about that, but you never know. They brought back Megatron like 8 times.
Speaking of, I really do enjoy the way that Galvatron happened in this movie. Because I love the fact that it wasn't just another, oh, he's risen from the dead sort of situations, because we did that already.
It's like a reincarnation.
And it's very much a well-thought-out scheme from his little mind.
Yeah.
That he was able to come back in a completely different way. And I really like that aspect. I think he will play a good villain in the 5th or 6th movies. It's nice to hear Frank Welker's prime Megatron voice again, because he does a really good job in that role. So I'm happy about that. I think he'll be an interesting character. He was really dull in this movie, but he wasn't meant to be.
Yeah,
awesome in this movie, even though everything that happened is pretty much his fault. He didn't really like battle a whole lot, so
it was a good setup for him.
One question that I see popping up a lot is the fact that Prime specifically mentioned that their soul and memories are in their spark. How would Megatron still be working as just a head?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know, because science.
The only thing I read is that some people are thinking that maybe because he was brought back to life with the Allspark in Revenge of the Fallen, that he doesn't really have a spark anymore,
because
his spark was extinguished.
Or maybe
it's just a Hollywood movie and we shouldn't put too much thought into it. That's an idea, too.
You know, because the head could still score, like, some thinking components. So it could have thought up the scheme, and then maybe, you know, when they built him, they included a spark. Because they could have had it. Although it would have been killed. But I don't know. It doesn't matter.
It
was still a thoughtful way to bring him back. Not, like, thoughtful, like, oh, how nice of you. But, like, you know, a well-thought-out way. But, yeah. But I liked it, and I look forward to more.
Because now it's time for the RRR caption contest.
Ping!
Ping.
It's time for ping! Sorry.
The sad thing is, that is what I was thinking.
It's begun.
Oh.
Anyway.
Okay, so this week's caption picture was a picture of my and Zach on tricycles. I guess I'll start. The caption I wanted to read was Peter Lee's. And it says, "They see me rolling, they hating.
They hating.
I can't breathe."
It was Pete. I love you all so much.
Hello, everybody.
Right, I'll read mine while Brian, Aerosol pictures Michael Scott being pink. I picked Chris's. This is now arriving at the tiny highway. Because now that is the image I get in my head whenever I hear those noises.
There's these two fools on bikes. That's adorable. Well, I got Edgar Quirk over here. Zach pleasures himself on a kid's tricycle while Mai isn't getting into it. Yeah.
She's like really bored.
She's bored with it, and he's like, oh, yeah, baby.
She hates
loving his bike.
And I picked George Hansen's, and he says, "Wow, the Gaim Drive crossover looks horrible. I heard there was a part where the Heisei riders and Showa riders race ATVs in wheelchairs around Tokyo Dome." The part that got me was the fact that he picked ATVs and wheelchairs. Not like motorcycles or even tricycles. No, wheelchairs. I guess because they're old and busted. I get the joke.
Oh, wow.
And geriatrics. Yeah.
It took you a while.
I appreciate Keith for making a Gaim pun. So that's...
Gaim puns are always welcome. All the Gaim. My personal caption is what Zach is thinking.
It's awesome.
Have them blame the beat writers on this one. Zach still smugly thinking, they can't blame us for shit. I don't know why I suddenly made like that Zach's defining thing now, is that he's just happy they're not blaming the beat riders.
The beat riders.
Okay.
Because now it's time for
final thingies!
With Ping! Sorry. I need to try one more time.
So I halfway through the caption contest portion, my connection went out. The calls just dropped me. And I feel like it was all the ping. It was just too much.
It was too much with ping. Too much ping energy isn't a good thing.
Oh my god, it works so well.
So...
I don't know why this horribly racist joke makes me laugh so much.
He's so good. Don't forget Michael Klump. Hey, everybody. No, Klump doesn't do it for you. But Ping. What about
Ping,
his Chris Rock routine? Anyway.
Ping
so
doing
make sure
the Chris Rock routine.
Yes. make sure to participate in the next caption contest that goes up. Send in questions. Pretend to be Ping around Aerosol. It gets him. I'm going as Morphicon is Ping now. Confirmed. I'm just kidding.
All you have to do is like put in big teeth and squint.
That'll be perfect. That's how Johnny Young Bosch was more Asian.
Awesome. Always racist.
Goodbye, everybody. This guy, I'm sorry.
I'm gonna start anti-coconut propaganda.
Coconuts only care about the special interest.
You make it sound like coconuts are this police state, and you're like the rebel underground group that's you know, trying to spread the anti-coconut slogans.
That's how anti-coconut I am. I personify coconut in my mind as the equivalent of Hitler.
Quote of the day.
Okay, well, enough Hitler bullshit. Let's get this going.
Yeah, Hitler.
Fuck you.
Well, I wasn't calling you Hitler.
Hitler, not you.
Oh. We're all accidentally insulting each other while trying to insult Hitler. Typical Wednesday. Can't believe I couldn't remember Nick Fury's name.
Mace Fury.
Sweet wrestling name alert. He's such an awkward Jedi. Like, in the movies, it looks like he's, like, swinging a baseball bat around when he's lightsaber fighting. He's like, I'm about to bust your ass. That's black people.
That's black people.
I'm glad.
Technically, we are.
Damn it. I feel like a politician that left their mic on by mistake. Mike!
Depends. What are you going to give me to leave it out of the bloopers?
I got a coupon to Papa Murphy's.
What?
That's the one thing that only exists in my universe.
Oh.
Because I remember you laughing.
Did me any good?
It's like take and bake.
What?
You pick it up raw and you bake it at your house.
It's like the grocery store.
Yeah, but it's more delicious.
I'm back. I have no idea what's going on.
We're talking about take and bake pizza, obviously. Oh,
I do have to say, though, when I get up to go do something, you gotta at least give me a 10 Mississippi.
Okay.
Because you're like, 1, 2, okay, he's gone. Let's go. Let's talk about him.
Can you believe that Milwaukee's growing? What a jackass.
Aerosol, did you cut off all your hair?
Yeah, I did.
Sweet.
Did you play the Balkan Skull theme where they were like, shape it up, Balkan Skull?
I love Kevin's tweet to me because he's like, aren't you already bald? And my first reaction is, hair grows back.
I thought about that too. I was like, but okay.